Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
In your life on this Monday, November 25th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well on this Monday afternoon, the Monday before Thanksgiving here in the United States. And let me tell you, I have a lot to be thankful for on this particular Monday, my friends. I have been doing this program since June of 2009. It started with AOL. It then went to SB Nation. And now, of course, it's with ESPN. It has been almost exactly 11 years since I've been doing this program, 10 and a half to be exact. And for the past 10 and a half years, every single major name in the history of the sport of mixed martial arts, the great sport of mixed martial arts, from Hoist Gracie to Randy Couture to Chuck Liddell to Tito Ortiz, George St. Pierre, John Jones, Daniel Cormier, Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, the list goes on and on. Every single major name in the history of this sport has appeared at some point or another on this program. At least once. More often than not, multiple times. But there has been one name, one particular fighter that has eluded me since day one. Today, that streak ends. Today, we make history, my friends. For the past 10 and a half years, I've been trying to get the great Gina Carano on this program. And for whatever reason, she has dodged me. She has ducked me. That changes today at 3:05 p.m. Eastern Time. The star of The Mandalorian, which happens to be streaming right now on Disney Plus. It's a tremendous series. I suggest you download it and subscribe and all those things. We'll be on today's show. This is a huge deal. I have continued to shoot my shot. I've tried every single avenue, and each and every time I was denied. Go back to the early days with New York Rick. At the end of the year, the award show, what do we say? We say, okay, who's the guest we want in the upcoming year? And it would always be the same for me. It would always be the same. And each year I was denied. I fell short. It changes today. Today, Gina Carano will be on the program. And we've got a who's who on today's show. We've got an all-star cast. Oh, yeah, it's a quiet time. The UFC is off. No, it's not a quiet time. It doesn't matter if the UFC is off. It doesn't matter if it's a bye week. We have got a phenomenal, dare I say, my favorite lineup of the year. Dare I say my favorite lineup of the year. So let's not waste any time. Yes, the UFC was off this past weekend. Relatively quiet weekend in the world of MMA. Bellator was in London. That was a nice show. Cage Warriors was in London. That was a nice show. Deontay Wilder did his thing in Las Vegas. That was nice as well. But relatively quiet in the world of combat sports. But not quiet here, my friends. Not quiet here. One note off the top. Cron Gracie was advertised to be on the program. He had to cancel, reschedule. He is hoping to be on next week. So I wanted to let you all know about that. But still, it's a phenomenal lineup from top to bottom. 4:05, we're going to be joined by the now former UFC middleweight champion, Robert Whittaker. Hasn't talked a lot. He does his podcast, but not to the media, since losing the belt in October to Israel Adesanya. He will talk to us at 4:05. At 3:05, we're going to be joined by the aforementioned, there she is, Gina Carano. Yes, on this program. We got a lot to discuss. I got a lot of questions. It's been a long time, 8 years since I spoke to her. So we got a lot to discuss with her. 2:45, TJ Dillashaw, the former bantamweight champion of the UFC, speaking on this program for the first time since his suspension out 2 years. We got a lot to discuss with TJ Dillashaw. How about Edmund Tarverdian, the man, the coach, GFC, Glendale Fighting Club, Edmund Shabazian, his new pupil, doing great things, MSG, knocking out Brad Tavares, formerly with Ronda Rousey. We've got a lot to talk to him about. We haven't talked to him since, I think, episode 400 of the program back in the old days, so I'm looking forward to that. Randy Couture, coming back from a heart attack, walked to the hospital, had the surgery, walked home. He's going to be on the show. Talk to him about that, PFL, and more. Luke Rockhold, he's going to be competing for Polaris this Saturday, Polaris 12 against Nick Rodriguez. We'll talk to him about that. Is he going to come back at some point? Why is he doing this? What's he up to these days? Why is he wrestling bulls or whatever it was? Crazy stuff. And Jarzinho Rozenstruik is going to be fighting Alistair Overeem on December 7th, replacing Walt Harris. Main event, Washington, D.C. We'll talk to him first time that the Suriname fighter appears on the program. But first, always great to catch up with a friend of the program, the pride of Baldwin, New York, a man who's very happy these days because the Islanders are killing it in the National Hockey League. The one and only Christopher J. Weidman joining us. off the bat.
Hey, what's up, Ariel?
How are you, Chris? How's everything?
I am good. How are you?
How about those Islanders, huh?
How about them Islanders, man? Yeah, they're looking really good. What I'm talking about. We had Boychuk stop by the gym the other day.
And, oh.
It's always good seeing him, yeah, because a lot of times they practice at Nassau Coliseum, and it's right around the block from our gym. So sometimes they'll stop in, say what's up, and it's cool, man.
Yeah, you know, I'm used to you Islanders fans like jumping on the bandwagon around April, not usually November, but now I see my timeline filled with Islanders stuff, so this is great. I'm happy for you guys.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Well, look at these lovely photos of the family over here. This is great
this
stuff.
This is beautiful.
How
right?
about this? Yeah. Little montage. We're trying to get you cry right off the bat here. It always helps when we show the kids.
So I already know your next question.
What? What's the next question?
So, Chris, listen, it's not anything new. You know, it's not anything surprising that, you know, you haven't been doing too well in your last few fights. And, you know, I just want to know, like, what is it like to, like, wake up in the morning and see your kids and have to tell them that you're losing? You're a loser.
No.
Like, what is that like?
I mean,
am I on?
No, totally off. But if you want to answer that.
I'm crying. I'm making myself cry.
It's a great question, by the way. I would love to know the answer to the question, but that wasn't going to be my next one.
All right. Yeah, it's not a good question. I'm not interested.
Okay. All right. We'll build up to that. Let me ask you, we're around a little over a month removed from that fight against Dominic Reyes. You've obviously had some time. You went away. I saw you were cornering some fights this past weekend. Congratulations to the team on the couple of victories there. But how do you feel about what transpired in Boston a month and a half or so later?
It definitely stings, you know, just, you know, go out there and, against a top prospect like that, and you know, a good win over him would potentially get me a fight with John Jones, and then a loss was devastating, you know, to now people right away it's like, is he going to retire? So it's just crazy, the contrast on what happens when you win or when you lose is just insane in this game. And it's just frustrating just to make a rookie mistake like I made in that fight, throwing that right hand, just kind of lunging in. You know, I felt good in the fight. You know, I felt good leading up. The camp was great. No excuses. I mean, he landed a beautiful left hand, step back, and cracked me good. You know, but the good thing is I came out unscathed, you know, not injured, no concussion symptoms. Body felt great. So right away, the next Tuesday, I was back into training. So it feels good to not have so much time off like I'm used to. I've had a lot of injuries, obviously, over my career. And I've had a lot of time off, and to not have to deal with that is nice.
So for the uninformed, what was the mistake that you made with that right hand?
I didn't set it up with anything. I didn't have the range. I wasn't even close to landing it. I just kind of jumped in. I seen him. I jumped in with the right hand, and you know, he slid back and cracked me with the left. You know, he's southpaw, so it's just a basic mistake. I should have set it up with my jab. You know, get my range first, take my time. I was a little bit too, I felt good in there. So I just felt like I wanted to, like, I'm going after this guy instead of kind of being a little bit more patient, setting up my offense.
A lot was made of the fact that you were moving up to 205. This was something that was discussed for quite some time. In there against a fellow 205er, a big 205er, how did you feel not having to cut as much weight? Did you feel like this was the right move for you?
It felt really nice not to cut weight and to go through the whole camp, kind of listening to my body on what I feel like I need as far as nutrition and so being able to give it that. And I didn't feel like he was much, you know, stronger than me or anything like that. I didn't feel weak for the weight or anything like that. I was actually surprised. You know, I'm always kind of thinking worst case scenarios. And when I did grab him, I did feel like the stronger guy. So, it wasn't like, you know, I felt small in there, but you know, it's the game we play.
There was some talk that you win this fight, you get John Jones. Was there any part of you now in hindsight that felt like maybe I was looking past Dominic? I was being asked too much about John. I mean, you're being asked about him, so it's not like you're coming out and talking about him, but every time you are asked about him and answer something about him, it becomes a big thing. And then he's responding to you. Did that take your focus away from Dominic at all?
Nah, definitely not. I knew Dominic was a tough fight. I knew there's a bunch of areas, you know, in his game that I could exploit, and I wasn't able to do that. So It's just disappointing, but I definitely didn't look past him or anything like that. The John Jones stuff, talking about that, was just fun, and I really did see that as a motivating factor that, you know, I get a big W in this fight. I'm fighting for the title against John Jones. It would have been great for me. It wasn't something that affected me, though.
There's always pressure, as you know. You don't need me to tell you about, you know, the life of a fighter. When you walk into that cage, there's pressure. But now at this point in your career, which is honestly unfair, unfortunately you're not the only fighter to go through this, it's like a referendum on your career each and every time you fight. You fight, you slip, you lose, you should retire. Who cares that you're still in your early 30s, you're done, you're shot, all this stuff. Does that add to the pressure as well? Like, there's enough on your shoulders to actually go in there and fight another human being, but now that it has to be decided whether or not you should continue each and every time you fight, does that get to be a little tiring?
I don't know. That's a good question. It definitely is a thought that runs through your mind. I don't know if it's additional pressure. You know, I just feel like pressure is always kind of like at the same level, and it just gets filled in with different thoughts. And, you know, if I was undefeated and I was fighting for the belt, that pressure would be the same to win that fight. But I might have different thoughts running through my head to get to that level of pressure, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But, so it wasn't like additional pressure, but it's just like different thoughts that run through your mind when you're, you know, coming off a loss or losses, and you have a lot of speculation on, you know, where you're at in your career from people being critical. So.
But if I can compare it to like an everyday person, compare it to a doctor, a lawyer, myself, I have one bad day. Okay. I come back next week and I do another show. You have one bad night. You're done. You're shot. You should retire. And you have to like look at people write this to you on your social media and stuff like that. That must be suffocating, right? I mean, I can't imagine going through that.
No, that's definitely the hardest part about our sport, is that it takes so long to get back into the octagon, whether you're injured or just the fact that you have to wait for a fight to be promoted. You know, like I always say, you know, you lose a basketball game, you have a couple bad games in a row, you know, you get the next opportunity right away to shut people up. In MMA, you know, you're defined by your last fight. That's how people see you. And so you're always rushing to get back in there to kind of like make that wrong right. And if you're coming off a loss. So that's annoying. Now you just have to deal with the critics for so long, and you have to wait a long time to shut them up. You know, they're not in your training sessions. You can't prove it to them while you're working out. You got to wait till you're back in that octagon to make it right. And that is annoying.
They posted this scene on ESPN MMA social media. It was from the Destin series where they followed you guys before and after the fight. And there's that one scene after, I'm sure you know the one I'm talking about, where it's really hard to watch. I mean, just knowing you, knowing your family, but you see all the familiar faces there, your wife, your son, your dad, your head coach, Ray Longo. And man, I can't imagine in that moment how you're feeling. You even go to the point where you're apologizing to them, and they're telling you you don't have to apologize, and you could see the frustration on your face. And I was reminded of a conversation that I had with Tyron Woodley recently, where he says he doesn't allow his kids to come to the fights because they saw him once get knocked out by Nate Marquardt, and he said never again. And you have them in there as close as possible. Do you regret that? Does that make things worse? Like them seeing you like that, would you rather they just not see you like that in hindsight and just be home and you could talk to them when you're ready?
So yeah, this is the first time I've ever had my kids come to the fights, and they didn't actually, they weren't in the arena, but they were in the arena, but they were backstage, like in like the green room with my wife. So my wife wasn't out in the stands as well. And, you know, so I didn't really see them before the fight or during the fight or initially right after the fight. They came to my locker room when I got back in, and obviously it's hard to see your kids. You know, they're very excited to see you win. And then you have to, you know, they know you lost, and they're trying to hold back their tears, which is probably the hardest part, is to see that they're trying to stay mentally strong and suppress their emotions. And I'm like, it's part of the game. And no, I to answer your question, I don't regret it at all. And I was always scared of this moment, but I don't regret it at all, because at the end of the day, they're going to lose in their life, whether it be MMA fights or just losing in general, whatever they decide to do. And you have to, it was my responsibility in that moment of just losing in front of lots of people to show them how you deal with a loss. And so it put extra pressure on me to, you know, use it as a teaching moment for my kids that, you know, you don't be a sore loser. Losing happens, and you hold your head up high, and you get right back to where you were, and you keep that same confidence, keep working hard, and don't lose sight of your goals, you know. So I use it as a teaching moment. And as far as like my coaches and parents and everybody being in there, it's just frustrating. And I say sorry and I apologize to them, because it's not like I'm this delusional guy saying, you know, I think I could be John Jones and people looking at me like I'm fucking crazy. You know, which is what happens when I say things like that. And it was the way they looked at me before when I said I was going to beat Anderson Silva too. But, the people that are in that locker room with me, they see me train every day and they believe in me, and they believe I'm capable of doing these things that I'm saying. And so I'm sorry to them that I didn't accomplish and do what they felt in their heart that I could do. And so it's not like I'm just saying sorry to say sorry. I know they love me no matter what, and they got my back no matter what. And it's just a frustrating thing to see, the potential, you know, of me not be reached in that given fight, you know, because at the end of the day, it's like a percentage game, you know. I go in there with, you know, Dominic Reyes. What's the percentage that I win? You know, we're fighting one time. You know, there's definitely different days that, you know, that I get in that cage with him and I win. And I know that for a fact. But that day it wasn't. And it's just frustrating. That's why I love this sport too. It's because the lows are super low and the highs are like crazy high. So, yeah.
I guess I didn't realize that was the first time that your kids actually came to one of your fights, because I've seen your son cage side, you know, for Wonder Boy or just with you when you're a guest fighter. Why did you decide that this was the one that they should come to?
Yeah, I always refused. Like when I saw other fighters bring their kids to fights, I'm like, oh man, I could never do that. I can't imagine seeing my kids and then walking into that octagon. But as it kind of was like a last minute thing. Like my son CJ, you know, he's getting to the age now, he's seven. He's super into sports, all sports, but MMA and football and wrestling are definitely like his top ones. And he was asking. I mean, he's seen Max Holloway bring out his son. He's seen Frankie Edgar bring out his son. He's like, Daddy, why can't I go? And he's pretty mature. He understands that, you know, you win and you lose, and you know, it's just part of the game. And so as we got closer, I'm like, you know what? I think to give him that experience might be really cool for him. And I would regret maybe not giving him that experience at some point, because when he does get older, when he's 18 and he's old enough to do things like that on his own, I'm not going to probably be fighting. I definitely won't be fighting. So to give him that opportunity was something I wanted to do. And I think he really enjoyed it. And, even though it didn't work out the way we all wanted, it was a really cool experience for him. And for my daughter and for my other son, Colton. But they're just Cassie, my daughter Cassie, she's older, but she's not super into the fighting, obviously, like CJ is. And my younger guy, Colton, he's four. He's Daddy, you beat him up? And no, Daddy didn't beat him up. Oh, okay. And he's on to the next thing.
Right.
You don't know.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Are you going to continue to fight?
Yeah, definitely continuing to fight. That's not in question at all in me. I feel great. You know, I've been through shit in this career. At the end of the day, when I do retire, I know I gave everything to the sport. I gave everything to the sport of wrestling. I've been through hell, you know, from my body. You know, I've had 23 surgeries, you know. But I feel good right now. Like that sounds crazy, but, I feel really good. My body feels good. The fact that I could get right back to the training and do what I love to do. I just feel like I'm still capable of some big things. And, for all you haters out there, you might not see it now, but, I plan on proving that. So, I mean, I don't know how much longer I have, or, you know, not that much longer, you know. I'm excited to move on and do other things too. I see that in the future, but not yet.
Have you decided?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, your next fight be at 205 or 185.
Yeah. That's what I don't know yet. So I know it's been a little over a month now, but I haven't sat down with my coaches or management actually yet and discussed this, like, and got serious about what I'm doing next. just because I came back to training right away. Obviously, the first week you don't really talk about. Hello?
Yeah, we're still here.
I got someone on the phone here talking to me, Ariel.
Uh-oh. What are they saying?
It's your people talking in my ear, like they're loud and clear.
Okay. You good now? Do you hear them?
I think no, we're good now.
All right. Sorry about that.
What was I saying?
205 or 185, and you said you hadn't talked.
Yeah, so the first week, it's like, you know, we're not going to talk about the next fight or the future. And then I went away for 2 weeks to Hawaii, visited a bunch of my wife's family out there. And then when I got back, I just got back to training. And then we plan on probably talking this week and figuring it out, just looking at the divisions, see possibilities. I can make 85 again. You know, 205 was fun. It's less stressful. And I don't feel like – I feel like I could beat anybody up there. But we just got to kind of look at the divisions and figure it out. Yeah, so I'm not sure if it's going to go back, if I'm going to go back down to 85 or stay at, up at 205.
What are you leaning towards? Are you leaning towards one or the other?
Oh, I don't know. It's kind of it's a tough situation. I don't know. I'm kind of like in no man's land right here, right now. And I don't know. I see, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Like one day I start leaning towards 205 and the next day I'm thinking 85. I don't know. One part of me, you know, starts feeling like, yeah, I don't mind. Should I just keep pushing myself to get down to 85? You know, don't be lazy now. I'm not going to be fighting forever. You know, push through and focus on my nutrition and do the right thing, get down to 85. And then I'm, you know, not going to be too much smaller than anybody. And then at 205, I'm healthier and, I'm going against guys that could be a little bit bigger than me, but I really do feel like when I grab these guys, as far as the wrestling, it's not that big of a deal. Maybe stand up. Maybe that's why I got hit in that last fight. Maybe the range from having a taller fighter, I leaked in. I didn't take my time. I wasn't used to that, going against a taller guy. It's the first time really doing that. I don't know. So obviously I'm just kind of thinking out loud right now. You help think it through. I'm going to kind of like really depend on my coaches and my close friends. I want to hear what everybody has to say and kind of get some help on that one. What do you think I should do?
Oh my. Well, I was actually just going to ask, how much do you weigh right now?
I'm like, in the mornings, I'm like 218, which was, I kind of was that during the whole camp. You know, so, which is what I was when I was like, I actually used to get heavier, when I was at 85 in between fights. I got better at not being such a fat ass in between fights. Like, I used to try to eat as much as possible. Now, as I got older, I just like, I know how fucking shitty you feel after eating three specialty slices and a chicken roll. So I just don't do that as much, you know?
I'll still
eat crap, but I just don't overeat as much. So my weight doesn't get up as crazy. So I'm like floating around like anywhere between 217 and like 221, not dieting at all.
Do you believe in the theory that like your chin has regressed, that you can't take a punch as well as you once did, and you feel like cutting the weight or not cutting the weight helps that or hurts that?
I mean, I'm open-minded to everything and every belief, and I definitely think fighters' chins just kind of dissipate over time if they've gotten a lot of wars and been knocked out, especially if I see them get knocked out completely cold. I feel like that does it more based on what I've seen. I don't think that is – I've never been knocked out cold, even though I've been hit with some monster shots. This last one was kind of like a flash knockdown. Like I was completely coherent. Remember everything inside that fight. I remember like everything. I remember as soon as he hit me with that shot, I'm on my back and I'm like trying to work the move that we were working in the back. Which wasn't a smart idea. I was grabbing for his heel to work some type of leg lock sweep. But, I think that is a thing. I don't think that's me. I mean, listen, it's like I don't have much chance. I haven't had a chance to really prove it in that fight. You know, I got hit with one good shot and I went down and he finished me off. So it's hard to like say, you know, do I have a chin in sparring? It's one of those things you can't. I don't know how to answer that. It's really hard. I still think I could take a bat over the head and keep walking as long as I see that thing coming. So that's kind of my mentality, but yeah.
Okay.
And as far as the dehydration and like dehydrating your brain close to a fight, and then them saying that, you know, you get knocked out easier because, you know, you're cutting too much weight, you know, I don't know if that was like a thing with me people were discussing, but that's been a thing, you know, that people, you know, discuss. I don't know.
Okay. In a perfect world, when do you want to return?
I don't think that was affecting me down at that weight. In a perfect world, I mean, I'm healthy already. I'm February.
Okay.
Like that, February, March.
So quick.
Yeah, pretty quick. You know, I know it sounds crazy. You know, you just got knocked out. What are you coming back quick for? But it wasn't like I got knocked out cold. Literally, like, legs went out from underneath me. He's hitting me with shots, and I remember the whole thing. I don't think it's one of those. I had no concussion symptoms. Like, I've had concussion symptoms over the years from some of my fights, and like, I'm, you know, when your brain needs a rest. This time it wasn't that situation at all. And I haven't been sparring, getting hit in the head. I'm pretty smart when it comes to that. I'm giving the brain a rest, but I don't think it was that bad of a shot. Like, where I'm hurt, I didn't get hit that much and that badly.
Well, I loved, as I told you, I loved the Instagram post that you posted afterwards, how you shoved it back, you know, to all the haters. I'm happy you're at peace with what transpired, and, you know, I wish you the best. It's always great to talk to you and to get your thoughts. Win or lose, you're always very gracious, Chris, so I appreciate it very much. Let's keep in contact. Let's see what the next step is. Thank you very much for coming on, as always. And happy Thanksgiving to the family as well.
Thank you, and congrats on everything that you're accomplishing, buddy. It's awesome to see you just rising through the ranks. You're crushing it, and also congrats on getting Gina Carano finally on the show.
Thank you.
Have a happy Thanksgiving. Do you celebrate Thanksgiving?
Sure.
Or American?
Why not? No, yeah, I'm American now.
You should.
Yeah.
And all right, guys, and I just want to say thank you to all the supporters out there who supported me through the thick and the thin, and I really appreciate it, and I hear you guys. Thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you, Chris. We'll talk to you very soon.
All right.
All the best to you. There he is, Chris Weidman, the former UFC middleweight champion, man who produced two of the greatest moments, and one in particular back at UFC 162 against Anderson Silva, that great knockout that we will always remember. Looking forward to seeing what his next step is and whether or not it will be at 205 or 185. So that's Chris Weidman's story. Now, talk to a guy who once held the belt in his weight class, to a guy who is hoping to win the belt in the not too distant future. One of the rising stars who has certainly made his mark on 2019, a breakthrough fighter. In my opinion, one of the candidates for breakthrough fighter of the year. And he returns to action on very short notice on December 7th in Washington, D.C. against the veteran and the champion for multiple organizations, the great Alistair Overeem. There he is, the pride of Suriname, Jairzinho Rozenstruik, joining us for the first time on the program. Jairzinho, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. It's great to have you on the show for the first time, and congratulations on all your success. The first question that I have is, can you explain the origins of your name? Because it seems to me like Jairzinho is a Portuguese-Brazilian name, but Rozenstruik seems somewhat Dutch. You're from Suriname. Can you explain how this came to be?
No, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. And it's an amazing show. I'm happy to be explaining myself on your show, so...
Thank you.
Next question. My name is Jairzinho. It came from a Brazilian former player. It was a player back then, I think 1988, with Pele and all those big guys, Maradona. And my dad and my mom, they love soccer. So they gave me that name. And my last name, my country, Suriname, was a colony from Dutch, the Netherlands. And our first language is Netherlands, and we have a lot of things that make are the same like Dutch, especially names, street names. Understand me?
So that's where. Have you ever met Jairzinho before, the player that you're named after?
No.
No.
I went to the museum in Sao Paulo, so I read a couple of things about him. So that's how I know he was a great player.
How would you describe the year that you've had? 2019, you've been training for a long time, kickboxing. You've been trying to rise through the ranks. First Surinamese fighter to make it to the UFC. Now here you are, 3-0, coming off an amazing knockout against former champion Andrei Arlovsky in Madison Square Garden, turning around to fight Alistair Overeem, great Dutch fighter, main event, Washington, D.C. Like, does this all make sense to you, or does it feel like a dream the past year that you've had?
Nah, it makes a lot of sense, and it feels like a dream. So, yeah, I saw those fighters from the game PlayStation, you know, and now I'm competing in the heavyweight division. It's like I'm living in a movie, but I'm just walking the journey.
Considering your Dutch roots, if you will, is Overeem one of those guys? Was he one of those guys that you were trying to emulate as you were coming up, that you were watching, thinking, oh, wow, one day if I could fight this guy, like, is this a bigger deal than the other fights were to you?
You know what it is. I used to watch those fighters, even Alistair Overeem back the K1 games, you know. But I never thought or had those thoughts on my mind, like, I'm going to fight him one day. No. So it's pretty surprising, and it's a big opportunity. Yeah.
You just fought back in early November at Madison Square Garden, and then they came to you with this opportunity literally like 2 days later. I remember you were in the background when Masvidal was on the Monday after the show. I know the fight didn't last very long against Arlovsky, just 29 seconds, but did you have any second thoughts about coming back essentially a month later, or did you take the opportunity right away?
You know what I mean? I just fought 29 seconds. I'm still in shape. Yeah. I didn't hesitate. I was like, yeah, for sure. Wouldn't be in.
Your last two fights combined, 38 seconds. Is there a part of you that, or maybe your coaches, maybe your coach would be the better one to ask this question, that feels like, okay, I would like a little more time to get comfortable, to show people what I have, to work on things, or do you like these really fast fights?
I like it. It's a challenge. And even my coach are like, hey, how are we going to do this? We're going to try to finish this faster. Or what, you know? So for us, it's how faster, how better. No damage, huh?
Yeah, those are the best fights, right?
That's true.
When you went in there against Andre, did you think it would end that quickly? 29 seconds against a former champ? Was that what you were envisioning?
No, but I was prepared. I was fit, retraining everything I think he wanted to do. And yeah, as soon as he made the mistake, I hit him with a jab, I follow up, and yeah, that was it.
And I've seen footage on your Instagram, on this great video blog series that you guys put out surrounding that fight, of people just exploding watching that fight. You've posted some clips of people watching, I think in a bar or a lounge or something, just exploding when you knocked them out. Was that back home in Suriname?
Yeah, a lot of that was back home in Suriname. And you know what it is? In Suriname, MMA wasn't that popular. Soon as I joined the UFC, everybody was like, hey, we want to be a part of this. We want to know what it is. And now everybody in Suriname is watching UFC, and every child and every fighter who used to train kickboxing start doing jiu-jitsu and wrestling. And yeah, they want to be MMA fighters. So everybody is following what's happening.
Because of you?
Because of me.
Wow. So you were just back there just a couple of weeks ago. What was that like? What kind of reception did you get?
Nah, it was crazy. Everybody was all over, and everybody's happy and glad that I represented the country out of our own country. And yeah, it's big, it's huge, and yeah, it's amazing.
Are you getting do a lot of people come up to you when you're? I see you here with the president, right? Isn't that the president of certain? Like this is incredible.
Yeah, it is. I got the full support of the president and the government supporting me for every step I make in the UFC. So I hope they will join us for this fight in DC.
Prior to your emergence, perhaps the most famous combat sports athlete from Suriname was the great Tyrone Spong. Have you ever met with him or trained with him in the past? Did you watch him as you were coming up?
Yeah, Tyrone is a really good friend, a close friend of mine. And I used to train with him from back then, still doing the same thing. And yeah, I see him, I think I didn't see him one because he went to England to train. But before that, we used to do our thing, hang out, train together, and yeah.
Is it possible that you are now more famous there than Tyrone Spong?
Not yet.
Not yet?
Tyrone is really famous.
Right. Maybe this time next year.
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. And of course, the reason why you're getting this opportunity is because of a very unfortunate situation involving Walt Harris and his stepdaughter. Was that a weird feeling for you? Because, and I know you've posted about, you know, the efforts to try to find, Anaya Blanchard. You know, you're so excited. You're so happy. This is a big deal. Your first UFC main event, but it's coming at the expense of a fellow heavyweight who's grieving right now, who's having, you know, a nightmare of a situation play out in front of his eyes. How did you sort of compromise those two feelings that you were experiencing at the same time?
The situation is really, really fucked up because I have a daughter of my own and I cannot think about such a thing happen to her, or, you know. So think of the situation. It's really hard. It's heartbroken. And yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. Think about that side and think about the fight. It's not the same. Not even the same.
Right. Yeah. It's horrible. And we continue to pray and hope that there's a positive ending to that story for Walt and his family, the Blanchard and Harris family. And so now you are in Miami, correct?
Yes, I'm in Miami, Florida.
So that's where you train. Do you live in Miami full time, or do you go back in between fights to Suriname?
I'm training here. I'm kind of have a house here and train full time.
Okay.
And I'm after my fight, I go home maybe 2 or 3 weeks and try to get back in the gym after.
And I noticed, by the way, that you're wearing the Find Anaya bracelet, which I think is a great gesture on your part. Well done, my friend. And so you beat Alistair Overeem on December 7th. Where does that put you in the heavyweight division? There's not a lot of space between Overeem and the champ, right? I mean, he's a legend of the game and has looked good as of late. Where does that put you, in your opinion?
Nah, for me, beating Alistair Overeem, it means a lot. But the fight I'm looking for is the Francis Ngannou fight. He's a big, scary guy, and I think, yeah, that's amazing. You put two big heavyweights, strong, who hit hard, create a bomb in the octagon. That's what we're looking for. I like exciting fights. So for me, that will be a great fight.
So that's the goal? Get through Overeem on December 7th and next Francis Ngannou?
Yes, that's the goal for now. And after, we're going to see what's happening.
Wow. Well, I mean, once you get by Francis Ngannou, that's it. Then it's title shot, right?
It is what it is. We're looking for to be the best fighter in the world, and to be the best, you got to beat the best.
There's not a lot of people calling out Francis Ngannou these days.
We are professionals, and I like that fight, me against Francis Ngannou, two big scary guys. That's exciting for me. That's a big challenge, and I really want to do that challenge also for myself and also to entertain the UFC fans. I think everybody wants to see that fight.
Yes, that is a great fight. And he's been very, as you know, he's been frustrated these days that he can't get a fight. So I think he's willing to fight anyone these days. And if you beat Alistair, I think that would be a huge opportunity and actually the right move in terms of your progression as far as your career is concerned. Can I ask you about something that happened around 5 years ago where it seemed like you were grouped in with a group of people who were trying to smuggle drugs, but they misidentified you and you were incarcerated for a couple of weeks? What happened there? And how scary was that, since it was then determined that you had nothing to do with it?
For sure, I had nothing to do with it. I know those guys, and soon as they get caught, they started calling people names. They call my name. I went to there. For me, it was a fight I couldn't beat. And those fights, you have to have the right people on your side. And financially, to have the people who can support you with that. And that wasn't the case. On one kind of way, I still do some prison time. And after, it was crazy. Was also heartbroken because I was also in a rise of my career.
Yeah. So how long were you actually, this is back in August of 2014, how long were you actually in prison for?
I think I was there for 16 or 14 months.
Wow, that long. Wow, I thought it was only just a couple of weeks. It was 12 to 16 months. And you had nothing to do with this. You were just falsely identified.
I had nothing to do with it. But so as I say, you get to have the right people on your side, like a lawyer, and you got to have the money to pay those guys. And yeah, it was a big case.
Are the people that were actually accused and found to be guilty, are they still in prison because of this?
I don't even know. As soon as I get out, I you know what, I'm a social guy, I'm relaxed, I know a lot of people, and it went in a situation I didn't understand, and as soon as I get out, I try to not mix up, and people don't put my name in those kind of things.
Yeah, and this was in the Netherlands, correct?
It was in the Netherlands, yes.
Are you able to go back there?
Yeah, I think next year.
Next year? Why next year?
I had certain things, like I couldn't go there, and I needed to fight it, and it was still next year, and yeah, next year I'd be able to go there again.
Do you feel like this is something that has followed you throughout your career since, and is that frustrating at all because you were found to be innocent?
Yeah, one kind of yes, because it had a lot. How should I explain this? It did a lot to me, because you're in there with those guys, you know you don't belong there, and try to fight to get out, and one kind of way it didn't work. And then you come to a certain point, like you have to work on yourself. How can I didn't see it coming, and people put you in such a kind of situation. So it was heartbroken, and I was kind of mad at myself because I didn't see it come.
Mm. And being in jail for 12 to 16 months, but knowing in the back of your mind that you didn't do anything, how did you not, you know, let that get to you? How did you not lose hope, lose faith? I would imagine after a few months, you start to worry that you might, you know, be stuck here for a while, right?
That's true. It did a lot to me. I don't show much, but it did a lot to me personally. Because, yeah, as I say, you're there with those people, you know, you don't belong there. And there is no way, left or right. So everything is like, you know, solid. And yeah.
Do you find since then, since you were released, that you appreciate life more, that you enjoy life more? Did it give you a new perspective on life?
For sure. Before that, I was always training, and I didn't like enjoy what I did. Like after my fight, do a kind of celebration, enjoy life more. But that's what I do now. Everything I do, I enjoy it, and I know that life is not easy. Everything you have, you got to appreciate it and appreciate life more.
Why do they call you Biggie Boy?
Biggie Boy. Yeah. Since I was a child, my name was difficult to pronounce, and I was playing basketball.
Oh.
I was 11 years old, and we were in a game, and I should make a shot, and everybody was like, hey, take the shot. Hey, you kid, you Biggie Boy, take the shot. And since then, the name stays Biggie Boy.
Oh, I like that name.
Yeah. That's a really good name.
It sticks. That's right.
Yeah.
And so when do you go to Washington?
The 3rd of December, we fly to Washington.
Okay. Are you familiar at all? Is there like a Surinamese community in Washington, D.C.? Because I was actually surprised. I saw several flags at Madison Square Garden when you fought. Do you expect to have a lot of people there supporting you?
I hope so. I'm not from around here, so I hope those people who live here, even Suriname people, come to support us and make me feel home. But what I used to is go there in somebody's home, beat somebody up, and go back home.
All right. And are you done with the kickboxing? Are you focused 100% on MMA?
100% on MMA.
Okay. Well, you're doing great things, my man. Congratulations on a great 2019 for you. 3-0, looking to go 4-0. Last two fights combined, 38 seconds. Unbelievable what you're doing. You get by Alistair Overeem, you get that Francis Ngannou fight. That's a huge deal. So congrats on all your success, and good luck to you December 7th.
Thank you. And also good luck to you with your show. It's a great show. Following this a long time, and I'm happy to join the show now.
It is our honor. Thank you very much. Hopefully we'll talk to you very soon. There he is, Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Up-and-comer in the heavyweight division, doing great things. Big opportunity for him on December 7th. All right, before we get to our next guest, let me tell you about our good friends over at Ancestry DNA as you take a look at Biggie Boy right over there. What do we got here? What kind of music is this? This is like, what is this, like Thanksgiving music? Okay, I didn't know there was such a thing, but it seems festive enough. Ancestry DNA is a truly meaningful gift with the power to connect families over the holidays. Every family has a story, and Ancestry DNA can reveal ethnic origins and provide historical details that bring unique family stories to life. Ancestry DNA is a gift that can bring them closer to their origins and to teach each other about their origins. Okay, you can see how the details of one family past can spark new conversation with their family today. Ancestry DNA doesn't just tell you which countries you're from, but also can pinpoint the specific origins within them, giving you insightful geographic detail about your history. Trace the paths of your recent ancestors and learn how and why your family moved from place to place around the world, from discovering origins in over 500 regions to the most connections to living relatives. No other DNA test delivers such a unique interactive experience. Only Ancestry DNA uses the world's largest family history database to give a deeper and more detailed DNA story. You can combine what you learn from your DNA with over 100 million family trees and billions of records for more insight into your genealogy and origin. So save big right now on Ancestry DNA with special holiday pricing and spark meaningful conversations around the holiday dinner table. Give the gift that can unwrap their own history. Head to Ancestry.com/MMA to get your Ancestry DNA kit on sale today. Once again, that's Ancestry.com/MMA. Support them because they support us. All right, let's move along now and say hello to our next guest. We have located our next guest. A couple of weeks ago on the program, you may recall that he left us stranded at the altar, just completely no-showed, and it was quite frankly, a little bit rude on his part, but we have located him. I see him at the corner of my eye. Let's say hello now to the one and only Luke Rockhold, who is holding his head down in shame after what he did to me just a couple of weeks ago. And I was very hesitant to have him back on the program. Luke, what do you have to say for yourself? Why did you do that to me?
You know, things have been busy. I've been traveling and, it's not always easy to connect, Ariel, but I'm happy to be here and, sorry, and I apologize.
Oh, well, that seems very sincere. I appreciate that. But, I mean, you don't strike me as the guy who, I mean, when you were a champion, you always had time for me. So, like, the excuse that you're too busy doesn't really fly. I mean, you've always had, you know, 15, 20 minutes to just no-show just seemed like a bit of a, you know, shot below the belt.
You know, Ariel, it's we've known each other a long time. I don't think things have really changed. Still the same guy, and like I said, it's just things are a bit complicated lately. I've been traveling a lot, and you know, so here we are. Here we are now, and I apologize for my absence to you and the fans.
Okay, now where have you been? You say you've been traveling. Where have you been? What have you been doing?
I've been going back and forth from east to west to Canada, your homeland, and I have a couple trips up there. I just finished up a movie up in Canada, and had some business opportunities up there, so keeping busy.
Okay. Is this your first movie?
It is. Technically, yes, it's my first movie. So I've done, everyone knows, some commercials in the past, some reality shows, but this is my first movie, so went really well.
Is it a speaking part, or are they just using you for your good looks?
I have quite a bit of dialogue. For sure.
Oh,
everyone was happily surprised, I guess you could say. So I felt good about it, and you'll soon come see.
Could you tell us what the movie is about, or is it under embargo?
You know, it was really out of character for me. So it was a fighting movie, believe it or not. So I played a coach, really nice guy too, really nice guy.
Okay,
really. It was super far out of character.
Really?
No. Oh. It was good. It was good. You'll see soon. Chuck's got a part in it too, and quite a few others. So it's a good movie. Yeah, it'll be a cinematic. You'll see come late 2020.
And correct me if I'm wrong. You filmed this in Saskatchewan, right? Beautiful Saskatchewan.
Beautiful Saskatchewan.
One of the few Canadian provinces that I've never had the pleasure of visiting. What is it like over there?
It is cold.
Okay. Good, yes.
It's cold, it's flat. What do they say in Saskatchewan? So you can, it's the one place you can watch your dog run away for 2 days.
Nice.
They have quite a few other sayings around the place that we visited, which was Regina, and I guess you could delight your imagination and run wild with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, I look forward to that. So you've been busy with that. I also saw recently that you were doing something where you were, I don't even know how to describe this, so like you were like wrestling a bull or something like that. What was that all about? And was it a bull? What kind of animal was this?
This was a bull.
Okay.
It's a bull, and something they call steer wrestling. So I was up visiting a friend of mine in Montana, and you know, sure enough, the rodeo was always, it's always part of the action there in Montana. And we stopped by. I wanted to get on a bull, but we were kind of a last minute entry and they wouldn't let me on the bull. Thankfully. So the only thing we could do was steer wrestling, which is the next best thing. So given the whiskey and the moment, I decided I'd jump on and tackle the thing and have some fun.
Wow. Was that the first time that you've ever done this?
Yeah. It was the first time. I didn't really know what I was doing. They were trying to kind of coach me as I was, you know, holding the bull, and, I didn't know what the fuck was going on. I just said, let's go.
Wow.
Nod your head and let's go. And, instinctually it just took over, and I flipped the bull over. I actually felt bad. I was like, I should probably let this thing go.
Yes.
I was getting into, it was going a little longer than expected, but, yeah, it was good. We took second place. I was still kind of not too happy about it because I didn't count my first turn of the bull, which would have been in, would have took first place, but, you know, I'll take it. Next time we'll get him back.
Now, I feel weird asking someone who has fought other human beings in a cage for a living, but like that seems to be a really scary thing to do. Like that thing can spear you, can maybe even kill you. I would imagine you were very nervous doing this as we take a look at the footage right over here. I mean, this is just absolutely absurd what you're doing. Who does this? This is the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was the first turn. That would have been first place right there.
Oh, they didn't count this one? Why are you doing that to the poor bull? You're like mounting it right over there. Why are you doing this?
The bull enjoys a good wrestle.
Okay. You weren't scared? Were you nervous? Come on, be honest.
You know, I had a helping hand with this this dark liquor they call whiskey in Montana, so my confidence was at an all-time high.
Liquid courage, I believe they call it.
Yes.
Okay. So you've been doing that. You've been doing movies. And we got word recently, November 30th, Polaris 12, your headlining grappling event against Nick Rodriguez. How did this come about?
They were kind of hounding me after a bunch of different grappling outlets were coming after me. So I kind of put off one of the next. And then I got to a certain point where I could start to kind of get back into training, and given the time frame, I figured it'd be fun. Give me something to work for and stay in shape and train for. You know, that's what it's really all about. You know, keeping that goal oriented mindset, having something to go for, but fun in the same respect. It's not like fighting where it doesn't take all my energy. This is just fun for me. So
for something like this, how long do you actually train for it?
I don't know. I'm just enjoying life. Training when I can, when I have to. But I feel good. I'm going to push it hard this week. I'm going to get out there and I'm going to take it to him.
And is there a weight limit?
He's a bigger kid. So, I don't know. He's coming down to 230.
Oh, wow. What do you weigh?
215-ish.
Do you have to actually weigh in before this?
I'm sure we do, some level. He's got to make weight.
Okay. And what are the rules?
It's a submission, I believe. Don't quote me on this.
You don't even know the rules?
Hey, I'm a gamer. I'm going to go out there and have fun. I think it's submission or judge's decision. No points, basically.
Okay.
So, bring it.
Interesting. And it's, I'm assuming, no gi, right?
No gi, yep.
Do you wear a rash guard?
You can, I think.
Okay. Will you bring any coaches with you, or are you just going solo?
I might bring a friend. I know me and Gilbert. Gilbert's competing too. Gilbert, you know, so we'll be. I'm sure we'll be helping each other along the way.
I'm just curious. Do these guys pay well, like comparable to your MMA career, or is it a bit of a pay cut?
This is just fun. Like I said, this is not about the pay. It's better than any other jiu-jitsu guy in the world, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
You got to get compensation from so many people and make this thing happen, the UFC and everybody. So it's fun. It's fun, and it's, you know, I can go out there and visit some friends and have a little competition.
Now, I heard you talking to the great lads over at Submission Radio, and you said that the BJJ guys these days, they're a little bit suspect. What do you mean by that, suspect?
Steroids and leg locks. Is that what they do these days?
That's it? That's the concoction?
I mean, I don't know. There's just not a lot of testing in there. And then, you know, I'm not a big fan of the leg lock game and butt scooting. And just, I think it kind of turns a lot of people off on the sport. I don't know. I like earning your takedowns. I think that's there's a point to that. You know, it shows dominance. I think people should get negative points for dropping to their ass and scooting like a bitch.
Okay, so for this particular match, you're not being drug tested, right?
I'm still being. I mean, not for this particular match, but I'm still on USADA's.
Sure. But like Polaris or whatever, you know, there's no sanctioning body that oversees this, so it's pretty much anything goes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So since you brought it up, I know we talked around 3 or so weeks ago and you've done some other interviews. The general sentiment now is your heart isn't into it, right? You haven't closed the door fully, but right now you're just not feeling fighting anymore.
Yeah, I've been doing it for a long time. 13, almost 14 years now or something like that. So I've been at the top. I feel good. I'm healthy. I'm not trying to beat this thing into the ground. I'm happy. I'm content with where I'm at right now, and I'm excited to go pursue different ventures. I've got a lot of things going on, and I'm just – fighting takes away so much from your life. It kind of consumes you, and it's nice to take a break from it and be able to enjoy – family and friends and throughout the year and not have something weighing on your mind. Like it's a lot to take in. It's a lot to go through.
Would it be safe to say that you have retired?
I'm not going to confirm or deny that, but I'm just enjoying life and I'm taking my time and I do what I do.
Would it be fair to say that you have probably fought your last fight?
I'm not one to close the door on anything in life, so I'm not going to jump to that conclusion.
When did you start feeling this way? Like, did you even feel this way before the Jan Błachowicz fight, or did it come after?
I mean, a lot of it's just forcing it, you know, forcing and chasing something that I don't. It hasn't been the same like for a while. I'd say I don't know, but And it's been the same passion. I think once you get to the top originally, like and you become undisputed at some level, you have to find something else to kind of drive you and push you further and want it more and more. This is fighting. And when you become the best, it's like, it's not like any other sport. It's not like a ball sport. There's so much that goes into it. There's so much violence and you have to have so much hunger to keep pursuing that. And it's hard to say it was there after that point.
And you also had jaw surgery after that fight. At any point when you're recovering from that, going through that, are you thinking like, yeah, this isn't really worth it anymore? Does that affect how you're feeling now?
That doesn't really affect how I'm feeling. More so just the lifestyle that it takes to fight. People don't understand, you know, what we do and how much it takes. How much it takes away from life, too. I don't need to do this to the end of time and ruin myself. So in the end, I'm happy, I'm healthy, and you can't fight forever. So let's get into business. Let's get working on the side and let's go have some fun.
How long did it actually take to recover from jaw surgery?
Well, I was wrestling a bull about about 6 weeks later.
Okay.
So you can see where my head was at. I think about maybe 8 weeks or something like that after. I think I was wrestling and I was on the bull. So.
How long was your jaw wired shut for?
Just a few days.
Gosh, is that annoying?
Yeah, I can only imagine people have to deal with that for like weeks at a time. So I think I was wired up for about 3 days.
Have you watched your fight against Jan again?
A little bit. Just kind of like right after the fact. I haven't watched it really recently.
Okay. Do you regret going up to 205?
No. Everything happens for a reason. I was just in the regret, maybe game plan, pursuing takedown. I feel like it would have been an easy out just to finish him there. I didn't realize I didn't really see too much on the feet. I just burnt my arms out, kind of working for the takedown. He's very, very tough to take down. And I over pursued that, and then I hurt myself in the end and slowed myself down, and I became lazy and a target.
Hmm. Do you think that's because of the size that he was tough to take down, or is that just because he's tough to take down?
I think he's tough to take down. Jacare obviously failed, from what I understand.
Yeah,
I didn't see the whole fight. But that the cage, and you get to that edge of the cage, people find grooves and ways, and it's hard to wrap people up sometimes off the cage. So I don't know. I just overdid it, fucked up. It's in the past. Time to look forward and do something fun, something new. What's next?
If that ends up being your last fight, like, can you walk away content? Do you feel like there'll be anything in 20 years that will nag at you, bother you? Or do you feel like, you know, you did it, you won the belt, Strikeforce, UFC, you're at peace?
Look at me. Do I look like I care? I'm happy. I'm happy with what I've done. I've done things that very few people have ever done in the sport. Champion in two different organizations, undisputed, and it's pretty nice to have a couple belts on the wall.
Yeah, is it kind of crazy? Go ahead. Sorry.
There's more to do.
Sure.
There's more to do. So there's more to life.
Have you thought, you know, because your fight, when you talked to me about it, it was like the same week of Chris Weidman's fight 4 years ago. You guys were fighting for the belt. And I feel like you'll always be kind of linked, especially on your end, because you beat him to win the championship. And now here, like 4 years later, not a long time, both of you sort of in this spot where, you know, your careers are being questioned. It's a referendum on your career when you fight. People saying you should retire. And all this. That's kind of crazy, right? Did it happen a little sooner than you expected?
I'm accepting of where I'm at. I don't know if I can say this. I don't know if Chris feels the same way, but I'm accepting. I'm happy to move on and do what I'm doing. So I wish the best for him. So be it.
Do you think that you will be a part of the sport of MMA in the future? Do you want to coach people? Do you want to be a part of the gym? Or do you think that business and acting and the modeling and all that will take you away from that scene?
Well, coaching doesn't really pay, does it?
Right. I mean, unless you're like one of the big dogs.
Even when you're one of the big dogs, I'm trying to get fucking paid, Ariel.
All right.
And I don't care. Any coach in the world is not going to get the money that I'm seeking.
Okay. So you're still going to model and do all that stuff? Polo?
I still do what I do. I don't limit myself, you know. So I got a lot of things in the works right now. I got a couple companies growing, and I got this couple movies lined up. That's more modeling gigs. We're growing. We're expanding. And we're doing what we have to do.
Well, I appreciate this because, you know, sometimes when you talk to someone who's maybe on the tail end of the career about to retire, you know, they don't have these things set up. They don't have businesses. They don't have acting career. They don't have modeling career. They don't have a grappling match, you know, on deck right away. So you obviously have a lot going on, and it starts again for you on November 30th, this weekend, Polaris against Nick Rodriguez. And I just want to say publicly that I have forgiven you and I've buried the hatchet, and you'll always have a home here, Luke, despite the fact that you no-showed me a couple weeks ago. Because, you know, sometimes in the past, that would call for, like, at least a six-month ban from the show. But for you, you know, we've been through a lot together, so I lifted the ban prematurely.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. It means the world to me.
Good luck this weekend.
Thank you. Enjoy the show.
All right. There he is, Luke Rockhold, former Strikeforce and UFC middleweight champion, competing this Saturday for Polaris 12. And you can watch that on UFC Fight Pass. So check that out. All right. Now let's move along to our next guest. And, I'm looking forward to this. I see something interesting out of the corner of my eye. One of the greats of the sport of mixed martial arts, arguably the greatest of all time, heavyweight champion, light heavyweight champion, UFC 68, came back after 12 months to beat Tim Sylvia, dropped him in the first minute. What a moment it was in Columbus. This man is an inspiration to us all. And just a few weeks ago, walked himself to the hospital as he was suffering a heart attack, then went under the knife and then walked himself back home. He's one of the voices of the professional fighter League. He is the great Randy the Natural Couture, who
look at that, Ariel.
Whoa, look at that, two Ariel.
That one sign just for you, brother.
I appreciate that. Wow, is this breaking? I don't know if I knew that there was a Randy Couture MMA ball, but is that breaking news right over there?
Brand spanking new, brother.
Wow, when does that come out?
Yeah. We're just releasing it now. I'm signing 250 of them as giveaways. Dave is here, got me in the middle of the signing. So, Dave has designated this one for you and a spot on your desk.
Right oh my there. Gosh, what an honor. This is great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You bet. We appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Well, let me just say it's great to see you, Randy. And that was a crazy story. Could you tell? I know you're probably a little bit sick. You probably told family members and, you know, you probably had to recite the story. But for us, if you don't mind, one last time. What happened? Tell us the story from beginning to end, because this is quintessential Randy Couture here.
It was a very weird day. I was, on Tuesday I was on a horse finishing up a Western with Michael Jai White, called Outlaw of Johnny Black, and then went into the gym on Wednesday. I had a day off and was getting a training session in. It felt great. Near the end of the training session, I started to feel like crap, and I'm like, man, it hasn't been that long. It's only been a week. Pretty normal session of block instruction and stuff that we do at Unbreakable. And I thought, man, I popped a rib. I got this weird radiating ache in my chest that won't go away. And I try to roll it out on a foam roller and my back popped, but nothing changed. And took a recovery drink at Unbreakable and immediately had to go to the trash can and throw it up. So I knew something wasn't right. And cause I've never been a puker ever. So went home, thought I just overdid it. Laid on the bed for 5 minutes or so, and it just this ache would not go away. And I said, "Man, something's wrong. Let's walk over to the emergency room." Which I my place in LA is about 3 blocks from Cedar Sinai Emergency Room. So we walked over to the emergency room. They got me in very quickly, hooked me up to an EKG, and then all hell broke loose. They're like, "Dude, you're having a heart attack!" And wow. They rushed me right upstairs to the cath lab. Went in through my wrist. And went in and my thick blood had created a giant clot in my main artery, the Widowmaker, of course. I had a plaque rupture, and your blood goes to the plaque rupture like it would any wound to heal that wound. And my blood's so thick, it created a giant clot that occluded the whole artery. So they went in, sucked out the clot, put in a stent to keep the artery open. Had to start a blood thinner and a statin to, stabilize the little bit of plaque I have in that artery. But other than that, man, I feel great. I feel normal. I had great workouts this week. I think I went, 8 or 9 rounds, sparring on Friday. So I feel good. A little sore from working out and getting back into the groove. But, other than that, I feel great.
Wow. Okay. And just to be clear, you've never suffered a heart attack before, right?
No, I have never suffered any kind of injury like that or illness like that. It was kind of a weird day, so I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't figure out. I literally thought I popped a rib, which I've done lots of times. It was this weird, dull ache that kind of radiated around my chest, and it just wouldn't go away.
Did they tell you, okay, if you would have waited a day or two, it could have gotten worse? The timing of it all, of you checking yourself in?
They told me. I was lucky that I came in when I came in. If I'd have waited another 30 or 40 minutes, it would have been a different outcome.
Wow. What kind of outcome?
The Widowmaker is called the Widowmaker for a reason.
Oh, my gosh.
It's the artery that kills a lot of people with heart disease. Now, I don't have heart disease. I don't fit any of those categories. I do have some genetics. I'm finding out now that my father had his first heart attack in his 50s and actually died of heart disease. So I don't have heart disease. I do have some plaque in that one main artery, probably from a car accident in 1994. They suspected scar tissue. So,
whoa.
It was a bit, like I said, it was a weird day. I'm glad things worked out the way they were. And I wasn't stubborn. Normally I would have said, I just overdid it and tried to, you know, push through it. And for whatever reason, I think throwing up certainly got my attention. Like I said, I've never been a puker. So we went in, and I'm glad we did.
Wow. When you hear something like that, 30 to 40 minutes, you know, it could be worst case scenario. What does that do to you? Does that scare you? Like, do you feel like a different person now? Do you have a new lease on life?
Yeah, well, I think that anytime something like that happens, it certainly gets your attention. I've spent my entire career kind of being that guy that, you know, used his conditioning to win. I wasn't always the biggest, strongest, or fastest athlete, but damn it, I will outwork you. And so, you know, to have a heart attack, it was just kind of strange. It kind of chips away at your identity a little bit and who you are, who you thought you were. And so I was, you know, certainly happy to be back up and running, feeling a lot more normal, a lot more like myself. And in a lot of ways, I feel better. We thinned the blood out and seeing things seem to be functioning better. So that's a good thing.
And so in total, you were there 3 days in the hospital?
Two nights, yeah.
Okay. And so you really did walk yourself there and walk yourself home?
Yeah, I, like I said, I live 3 blocks from the emergency room. It makes a lot more sense. I'm up and walking, so why not walk over there? It'd be a lot faster than taking an Uber or a cab or certainly an ambulance and then forget about the cost. I mean, so, I felt fine other than I felt like this weird ache. I couldn't figure it out, so. We walked over and I thought, well, I walked in here. By God, I'm walking home.
How long was the surgery for?
Pretty quick. I think they get in there and get that done in under an hour.
Wow.
They put a catheter right up your main artery. If you're a smaller person, they have to go through your thigh. I'm big enough that they went through the artery on my wrist and accessed my heart that way. And I had a really dandy bruise there for about 2 weeks.
Wow. And so when you came home, like, did they say, like, you need to chill out, you need to stop, you know, pushing yourself, maybe stay away from the gym? Like, what kind of restrictions were put on you?
There were actually, I was cleared to start training. Obviously, they wanted me to take it easy and ease back into it. They weren't really sure what to do with me. I'm not overweight. I don't have a heart disease. I don't fit a lot of the categories for somebody that's walking into their emergency room with a heart attack. So it was a bit strange. The doctors were scratching their head. I didn't really know about the scar tissue that I had there. I went back to my old team doctor in Oregon, which is where that accident happened. And he had done an angiogram back in 03, I think might have been 07, that showed that scar tissue and showed that little bit of plaque in that particular artery. And he sent me those letters to give to the cardiologist and all of that as I went through this whole process. So it was just a weird day.
Did you see all the, you know, everyone, once this news came out, everyone tweeting about it, sending you wishes? Are you even able to see any of that afterwards or the whole, I mean, obviously
my
not
phone,
top of mind.
Yeah, absolutely. My phone blew up that next morning on Thursday morning. I walked into the hospital on Wednesday in the afternoon and by Thursday morning it had gone public. And TMZ did a thing on it and all that. And my phone just blew up. It was amazing. It was overwhelming, the outpouring of love. And man, I don't even know what to say about that. It was pretty unbelievable. So I appreciate all my fans and all the people out there that reached out to me. If I didn't make it back to you, you've got to understand that it was a pretty overwhelming situation.
By the way, how did they find out about it? How did TMZ find out that you were in the hospital?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think they must have scouts or people that stake out the emergency rooms or stake out the hospitals for situations like that. I honestly don't know. So it is what it is. They've always been really good to me, and I've tried to, as you know, be good to the media and embrace the media and not shy away from the media. So, you know, sometimes it can be negative things, but they've been pretty dang good to me.
Yeah, so I'm guessing you weren't bothered by the fact that it was made public.
There was no way to keep a lid on that. Sooner or later, you know our sport, sooner or later that stuff's always going to get out. It doesn't matter. So you might as well make the most of it, make it positive, put it out there the way it needs to be put out there.
Do you find a month later, do you find that you appreciate life a little more now, that you view things a little differently?
I think, you know, I've always kind of been in that mindset anyway. You never know when you're going to draw your last breath. So you honestly need to live your life and be happy and do the things that bring you passion. So that's certainly enhanced a little bit more. I think anytime you have a near death experience, it changes your perception on a lot of things. So I'm blessed. I have an amazing family. I have three wonderful kids. All those things come into sharper focus under these circumstances.
And as far as like what you have to do now in terms of staying healthy and staying out of the hospital and not recreating this, how has your life changed?
Well, I have a couple new medications that I have to take every single day. And some of that may be for the short term, maybe a half a year or a year. Some of that may be for the rest of my life, which is fine. I mean, I'm okay with that. It certainly could be a lot worse. There are people in a lot worse situations with their health. So that's a small price to pay to be healthy, to keep this blood thin. I have to continue to stay on the blood and give blood right now every 2 weeks until we get my numbers down into the normal range. My hemoglobin and hematocrit are very high and for some reason spiked above normal. They've always been right at the top of normal, but for whatever reason, they jumped above normal and caused part of this problem. The dehydration from the workout and the thick blood were probably the two leading factors for what happened.
Just a few days after this, there was another PFL event. You, of course, had to miss that. How much did that bother you?
It bothered me. And I could have made it back to Vegas for that final for the light heavyweights and the heavyweights. And I wanted to. I wanted to work, but George, Greenberg encouraged me that they really wanted me to sit out. They didn't want to have any repercussions or ramifications. Just recover, get healthy, and come back for the final.
So you will be returning on December 31st.
I will be there for the New Year's Eve finale. Absolutely, can't wait. It's going to be an amazing night of fight.
So no problems flying or anything like that. No concerns about any of that.
Nope, I've already flown. There are no other issues or restrictions on me. This new medication, especially the statin, will stabilize the plaque, so we don't have any more plaque ruptures. Kind of trying to stay away from the red meat, but the statin again will keep my bad cholesterol bottomed out, so I don't develop any more plaque in any of my arteries. And then the blood thinner will make sure that nothing sticks to that stent in that artery. So they don't want any other plaque or any other thick blood sticking to that stent and causing any more issues. But other than that, I'm clear.
You know, these days, everyone's going plant-based, perhaps.
Yeah. I did that for a while. When I first got down to 205 with the help of Ryan Parsons, our chiropractor and nutritionist guru, I did the plant-based thing for quite a while when I came down to fight Chuck the first time.
And really?
I felt pretty darn good. Again, I don't know if I'll ever be a vegan or a vegetarian, but definitely limiting the red meat and sticking more to the chicken and the fish. And I've always kind of tried to eat clean and do what was best for this machine that I'm trying to run at a high level. So I got no issues. I saw The Game Changer, the new documentary that's out.
And yes.
Pretty interesting. A lot of interesting information in that. Certainly maybe a little skewed towards the vegan or vegetarian thing, but I think there was some interesting stuff there for sure.
And how about your old pal Gina Carano in Star Wars now? You see this? You're doing your acting thing she's doing? How about that, huh?
Yeah, no, she's killing it. She's great. Obviously been a great friend and a huge fan of hers for a long, long time and really proud and happy to see all the inroads that she's been making in the acting world and no better person for that success.
Well, I'm very happy for you, Randy. I'm happy to hear. It was obviously very scary news. You don't hear this often in our little community, and you're one of the most beloved figures in the history of the sport. So I'm happy that you're doing okay, that you're feeling better, and that you'll be calling the action on December 31st. That's insane. I thought maybe you'd take the rest of the year off, but the natural never sleeps. How about that?
So no rest for the best.
Yes, I wish you the best, and thank you for the bobblehead. I look forward to putting it right here on my desk.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Appreciate you having me on and setting the story straight. Always being the guy that you are.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Randy. All the best to you.
Thanks, bud. Be well.
All right. There he is, the great Randy Couture joining us. And great to hear that he is feeling better. Obviously, very scary stuff. But He looks to be in great spirits, and he looks to be in great health. How about that? This is the lineup, by the way, for the PFL Championship on December 31st. The famed Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden will be hosting it. Of course, the big one is Kayla Harrison against Larissa Pacheco. Everyone thought it was going to be Kayla Harrison against Sarah Kaufman. Kaufman lost in the one-night tournament. So it's going to be Kayla Harrison, Larissa Pacheco, also Ray Cooper III trying to get that welterweight championship. Did not get it done last New Year's Eve against David Michaud, which is a great story. Lance Palmer, Natan Schultz, Jared Rochalt. I believe Pineda is no longer on the final card of the season. But there you go, ESPN2, December 31st, New York City. Nice little tradition they've built up now, having these events on December 31st. All right, so that's Randy Couture's story. Now let's move along to our next guest. Very excited to talk to this man. Been a fixture on the MMA scene for quite some time. We saw him at Madison Square Garden earlier this month with his new prize pupil, Edmund Shahbazyan, one of the rising stars in the sport right now, continues to impress each and every time he fights. He is undefeated and just beat Brad Tavares. We're talking now to his head coach, the great Edmund Tarverdian of Glendale Fighting Club, joins us right now. It's been a while since we had the opportunity to talk to Edmund, and I appreciate him coming on very much. Edmund, how are you?
Good, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing really great. It's great to talk to you. Thank you for doing this. So to see a guy like Edmund Shahbazyan, a guy that you've known since, you know, his early days as a teenager, to see him turn into this, has this exceeded your expectations? Did you expect him to turn out to be such a great pro?
Well, no, we expected it. You know, he's always been doing good in the gym and sparring and competing at high level competition. And, but, you know, I'm not going to be arrogant and say, yeah, you know, we're going to expect exactly this and all that stuff. But he looks great in the gym. He trains very hard. And, you know, we had the high hopes, and him performing like that really put it out there so we could believe in it more. You know, we did believe in it, but competing at that stage, at that level, at that age was a tremendous accomplishment. And he did exactly what he was supposed to do.
How old was he when you first met him?
10 years old.
Wow. 10, younger than I thought. And how did you meet him?
Well, he came with his brother. He was a little chubby kid that wanted to do some martial arts. And he came into our karate programs that we have for the youth. We start from 4 p.m. after school programs. And he started with that. Then we transitioned into our grappling programs, boxing, and started competing, you know. But he had good karate background. He's got a black belt in karate, so that's why he could kick and punch, you know. But then when we put him in deep competition and amateur boxing programs and, you know, a lot of wrestling in high school. And he basically did MMA in our gym. He came here to become an MMA fighter.
Yeah, he's part of that new generation that doesn't come from one specific discipline, but is just a complete MMA fighter. At what age do you start talking to him like, hey, you're really good. Maybe we should start thinking about this being a career. When does that happen?
When he was 13 years old. When he was 13, we started. I went on YouTube and I saw a video somebody upload of him that we don't even have that fight of his. He's 13 years old competing up against, it's a smoker fight, which is a gym competition for Muay Thai kickboxing, which is nowadays not allowed. So they don't give a winner and a loser. Basically, it's just like a sparring session, but it's actual, you know, it's good for a young at that age to compete. And he was competing against a 25-year-old, and, you know, he wins the fight. He does great. You could see me in the corner, and I looked at that. He's only 13 years old going up against a 25-year-old. So a kid at that age that could fight at that level and fight adults and, you know, and do what he's supposed to do and listen to everything we tell him in the corner. I was watching it the other day and I was like, man, this is awesome. And people are starting to recognize him and putting videos out there. But at 13, I knew this kid has, you know, he has the mental discipline. He has the mental toughness. The work ethics are there. He listens when you speak. So he's a great kid, you know, honored student. Everything is there. Be a champion.
And his parents were okay with him fighting that early, that young?
Oh, they love it. His parents love it. And his dad actually knew my dad for a long time. But his dad, you know, his parents keep it very professional. They've been in my gym probably maybe 2-3 times only watching Edmund. So they trust us 1,000,000%. They come to the fight, of course, but they let us do what we're supposed to do. And the belief is there. I look at Edmund like as my own kid. And father wants me to do that, and we've made an agreement that that's what we're exactly going to do.
I met him for the first time prior to this last fight in New York City, and he just has like such a smile. He seems to be a very happy-go-lucky kid, always in a good mood. Does anything bother him? Does anything rattle him? Does he get, you know, fazed by any of this, or is he always that way?
That way, he's always smiling. So, you know, we wanted to name his nickname Mr. Smiley or something like that. But, you know, he has a golden heart, so we call him the Golden Boy. But he's always like that, very positive kid, a good energy, always ready to go. When he gets in here, you know, he's a good kid outside, you know, with friends, everybody, and he treats everybody very nicely. He's just the way he is.
Now, the fun part about his story is now you can go back and look at some of the footage of Ronda training at your gym, and he's in the background. He's a part of it. He saw the entire, you know, rise, and he saw how big of a start. He got a front row seat to all of that. Do you think that has helped him at all? Like, were you talking to him? Were you trying to show him what was going on as it was going on? I know you were so focused on Ronda, but you had other fighters as well. Do you feel like living that experience, everything that she went through, will now help him as he tries to make that same rise?
Yes, it has helped him a lot. I mean, he's seen that hands-on, and with Ronda, a few of the open workouts and a few of the camps, you know, he was helping out, and he came and he saw all that, all the pressure that Ronda dealt with so greatly. And I think every little thing in the gym that he saw, he picked up. But of course, what she did was huge, and I think it's a big confidence booster. And you know, he's seen it. He's worked in the corner with me with Travis's fights also, and. You know, so I put him in places that he could get a feel of exactly what he's going to see in the future. So we've done that. I think the guidance has been great, not only on behalf of me, on behalf of all our training coaches, our training camp, and everybody's been doing a great job with this kid and putting in a lot of time. And everybody has helped besides all the athletes in the gym.
I know this is about Edmund, but for you personally to have, you know, a new star pupil, a guy who seems to be a real legit superstar, potential champion, if you will, the first one maybe since Ronda Rousey, a homegrown talent, if you will. Is there a part of you that's like, you know, for everyone that doubted you, for everyone that hated on you after her fall, this is kind of a way of shutting them up? Is there any part of, I know you're trying to make this about him and you want to be humble about it, but for you personally, I know you took some of that stuff, you know, to heart. Is there a part of you that's like, I'm going to show you what I can do. I'm going to show you the kind of coach that I can be.
Definitely. Everything is a motivation, you know. So I think the people that, you know, have doubted me and all our work in the gym, and, you know, it's not only Ronda. We've had boxing champions in the gym, kickboxing world champions. So, you know, when I look at it, I'm like, hey, this is how it's going to be. Of course, Ronda's was so huge, and all that doubt, it was a motivation to me. And now it's a big motivation for me to show the whole world what I could do with Edmund. And, you know, bringing in fighters, every time I bring in special, unique champions, and that's what it's all about, is having champions that are great, that leave a legacy that, you know, people could learn from and people could look, and it's history that is going to be made. And, you know, I'm doing that with a young 21-year-old that performs at this level, and now people are starting to recognize and, you know, realize that hey, life, it goes up and down, and, you know, at times you have to fall down so you could understand what you're doing and even work harder. And, you know, they do motivate me. So I'm not upset at any of the hate or whatever has happened or all the criticism. It's part of life. And I'm learning as I go, and it's life, man. It happens, Ariel. So, but I'm happy and excited that I could be in this position again. And I thank Lord for that.
You've kept a relatively low profile, you know, since Ronda left the sport. Initially, like you're saying that now, but initially, did you have a different feeling towards the criticism? Did you feel like you were unfairly, you know, ridiculed, critiqued, mocked by the sport? And did you feel like you needed some time away from everything, from the limelight?
No, actually, I didn't get time away or anything. I just, you know, it was out there. Like last time we spoke, the disappointing part a little bit was more coming from people that should understand more about the sport. Not only the fans do understand, but the people that actually sweat every day in the gym. And that a bit, you know, touched my heart, but I didn't take time off. I was back in the gym, and all the other fighters were pushing me, and everybody was pushing each other in the gym so we could have more champions. And now we're on that path, and everybody's working hard in the gym. We're gonna have more fighters that are from our gym that are gonna be in the UFC soon, and, you know, in big organizations.
Do you still have a relationship with Rhonda?
Absolutely. I spoke to her yesterday.
Oh, really? How is she doing?
She's doing great. She's happy. Everything is good. She actually knows that I'm going to be on your show.
Oh, how does she feel about that?
She's happy. Everything is good. She says whatever decisions we make, she supports it. So it's the right decision. This is all about Edmund. We have a new fighter, so we're putting everything in the past. Whatever was wrong, right, negative, positive, we're taking all the good only. We're leaving all the other stuff that happened behind us so we could support up-and-coming great kid that is has the potential of becoming a champion in the future.
I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. I think I know what you're referring to, so I appreciate that. I'm just curious. No chance she ever fights again, right? I feel like I have to ask the question. No chance, right?
Okay, you're asking. No, you know, I'm going to leave all the stuff up to her. She could answer her questions. So, Ariel, I'm not going to say anything.
Okay, that is fair. Did you enjoy her time as a wrestler, though? Did you watch, you know, did you watch like a proud father? Did you like that?
Yeah. I like it. I like what she's doing with her career. Everything is good. And I took my son and my family actually to watch her wrestle. She's doing great. So she's happy.
Really? Okay. I read a story that came out just a couple of days ago with The Athletic where they said that, written by the great Chuck Mendenhall, that you were like crying. You were so emotional in the cage after the fight against Brad Tavares earlier this month in New York City. Why were you so emotional? Why did you feel that way after Edmund knocked him out?
Again, Edmund is like a kid to me. You know, a lot of parents with their children nowadays spend a lot of time, but in living in America, we know that it's school, activities, sport activities, this, that. Edmund is like my son, you know. He's been in this gym for so long and so many hours being put in here. You know, I mean, he probably saw me more than he saw his father and mother, you know. He was here after school, and he's in school in the morning. He wakes up, parents go to work. He's in here, you know, working every day, day and night, you know, hard work. And what he did and fought a good fighter, great fighter, you know, a tough fighter like Tavares, and he performed that way. So it really touched my heart. Besides just only the physical and mental investment that we've had with Edmund, you know, it's been a lot of everything. It's been like my son, all the financial, everything, you know. I've taken care of so many things. Like, that's, of course, between me and him, but I've done everything like a parent would do for a child. So we've been in so many different competitions throughout the states, whether it's boxing. I had to put coaches with him, you know, put a big team behind him so he could go and compete when I was busy with Rhonda. So we've done so much, and I think he appreciates that so much. And me seeing him perform at that level, it really touched my heart. So I was emotional, and I was so happy for him that he did exactly what we worked on. Whether we, you know, went through what we had to do in the locker room, he came out and did exactly what we worked on, and he looked great doing it. So, you know, the way he kept his, he was calm and calculated, and the way he performed really put tears in my eyes, and it was just a joy of happiness. It's not, you know, and we're going to see more of him, the way he performs, and maybe next one I will be more, so much more relaxed than or tears. I'll just, you know that he could do it. But that big step up fighting people in UFC fighters in the top 10 at that age, it's not a joke, Ariel. And we know it's tough competition. And what he did was amazing. So it made me really happy.
Has that ever happened to you before where you were, you know, openly crying like that of joy in a cage, in a ring after a fight?
Not in a cage with Rhonda's performances. I've been a bit emotional at times, not in that way. You know, I've had a boxing match that we got dropped for the WBC title, one of my fighters, and we got dropped in the first round. The way I spoke to him, and he came back in the sixth and stopped the fight at the Staples. We fought him there, the Chavez Jr. undercard, when he fought for the world title. So we were the co-main event on that. And, you know, he put tears in my eyes too, you know, my fighter, Ronis. And I've had moments like that. You know, I think it's that the whole camp and how we worked. And, you know, before this camp, we had a little, before this fight with Tavares fight, Edmund had we went through a few little injuries. And he, at 21 years old, he took it so well. And, you know, I don't even want to talk about stuff like that. But the kid was, he was like, coach, I'm going to fight no matter what. And he, coming out and performing like that, it's just amazing, you know. He's got heart of a lion. That's what we call him, the golden boy. He's got the heart of gold.
Is he the youngest person that you've been with, like from 10 years old now to being a pro? Have you taken anyone from that young of an age to this point, or is he the first?
Yes, the first that we started from 10 years old. That
wow.
At this level, yeah.
That's unbelievable. And to the best of my knowledge, Rhonda is his manager. Is she actually negotiating his fights and his contracts and things like that? Or is it a whole team of people, including you?
It's including me. Me and Rhonda do it together, but we've been working with Dana, and he's been great. And, you know, me and her deal with the situation, and we're both in the loop with Dana in conversation. And so we do it together. You know, I've done her career, and she respects that. So both of us together, I think, have enough knowledge to guide this kid into the championships and make sure that after his career, he will be happy and he could enjoy his life.
Is this the only fighter that you guys do this with, or do you have a group of fighters now?
We have a group of fighters. All the guys that come out basically from my gym, me and her have an agreement that we should, you know, work together and help these kids grow. Her name, her experience, everything is helpful. And her even talking to these young athletes, you know, before fights, after fights, I think it's a big plus. And we've made history together, and Rhonda's always with me no matter even if I do most of the work, she knows that she's with me, and, you know, we're together in this.
Does she ever pop into the gym to train with the guys?
She's popped in before, yeah. She's popped into the gym, not training so much. She's so busy with all the her stuff she's doing. But she does pop in, and she said hello to Edmund, and we had some time together before this fight.
Last thing on Rhonda, I'm just curious. You know, like 2 weeks ago was the anniversary of the Holly Holm fight, and everyone talks about it, posts things. Do you see that stuff? And if so, how does that feel when you see that? You know, it feels like an eternity ago, but it was just 4 years ago. How do you react when you see that stuff pop up every year around this time?
It's done what I think now. We're just working on our new fighter, like I said, Ariel, on Edmund, and everything is in the past. And you live and you learn, and there has been many, many greats that have been defeated. Life continues. She's living very happy. Everything is great. And we're going to have, we have a kid that she worked with and she's helped. She's been hands-on with, that is going to continue growing and is going to put smiles on her faces.
It's a wonderful story. Now, he doesn't have his next fight yet, or does he, maybe?
No, next fight is not lined up yet. I asked for a little bit time for him to develop a little bit. His physical his strength is getting better day by day. You know, he's a kid that is going to be in his prime when he's in, like, not in his prime, but in his peak of his physical ability, like 23. So I need like another 5-6 months of him to develop, and fight by fight, day by day, his performance is changing, even in the gym. So I asked for just a little bit time before we take the next one. Of course, I've been offered something already, but that's going to be between me right now, because the fight, I haven't made a decision to say yes. But with the fighters, anything they give me, I'm always going to say yes. It's just about the date, so I'm going to have to decide that. Hopefully we could get in on what we want is end of February or March. I just need just a little bit development time, meaning he fought 4 times this year, you know, and it hasn't been easy, and he a few little injuries here and there. So we just want to make sure he's healthy and he's young, not to rush into anything.
Yeah, and it's amazing, because this time last year, we saw Brad Tavares fight Israel Adesanya, same venue, Madison Square Garden, now he's the champion. Is it possible that this time next year, we're talking about Edmund as maybe a title contender? Do you feel like that's possible, or would it be a little too soon?
100% possible. Like, honestly, if you want my honest opinion,
yes.
I've been you know, humble about everything today that I'm telling you, that we need development time and everything. But if they say that we need to fight Israel in March, I promise you, I'm 100% confident on my fight. We're ready to go.
He's wow.
ready to go. That I could say.
Wow. Okay. So now it's just about.
If I haven't seen it at that level, but guys that are at that level, or, you know, I see that I'm going to have difficulty, you know, from distance, inside fighting, middle distance, you know, wherever this fight goes, outside, he keeps it on the outside. We have to wrestle. If I'm not confident anywhere, I wouldn't say that, but I'm confident everywhere.
Okay, what a fight that would be. That would be incredible. Well,
I hope they're confident where they take the fight, you know, because wherever they take it, this kid's ready. That I'll promise.
Okay, All right. We will remember that. Edmund, great to talk to you again. Congratulations on all your success with Edmund and the team. Good to see you back, you know, in the limelight, doing great things in the sport of mixed martial arts in the UFC. And we wish the best to you and Edmund. Looking forward to seeing what he does next.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. I'll talk to you soon. There he is, Edmund Tarverdian, head coach over at the Glendale Fighting Club. If you have not seen Edmund Shahbazyan compete, you know, we spoke to Jairzinho earlier in the program. He's on the short list for Breakthrough Fighter of the Year, and Edmund Shahbazyan certainly on that short list as well. A young stud at 185 pounds, and interesting to hear Edmund say that, you know, fighting someone like Adesanya right now, they can hang. They can do some big things. So let's see where he's at this time next year, much like Israel when he beat Brad Tavares last November at Madison Square Garden. Great stuff there. Great to catch up with Edmund Tarverdian. All right. I'm very excited to talk to our next guest. I've been bothering him for quite some time. And thankfully, just a couple of days ago via text message, he agreed to come on the program. So let's not waste any time. Let's say hello now to the former UFC bantamweight champion, TJ Dillashaw, kind enough to join us. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing good, my man. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to talk to you, and I'm sorry for bothering you so much over the last few months, and I'm really happy that you finally replied and agreed to come on the show. Thank you for this.
Yeah, man, it was a much-needed escape. I had to, you know, get away, get my mind right, and, you know, deal with everything that I got going on.
How are you doing? You know, it's been around 7 or so months since we found out the news about your suspension and the failed drug test. How are you doing now here, end of the year?
You know, it was a rough 6 months. I went through double shoulder surgery as well as dealing. So obviously down in the dumps and then not being able to work out or be active and keep my mind clear was it was real tough. I'm not going to be honest, you know, mentally draining, and I've pushed past it. I've had to deal with adversity and my decisions and what I've been dealing with.
Is it almost possible that the mental side of things was harder to deal with than the physical side of things? You mentioned the two shoulder surgeries. This was a good time to do it. But to deal with the blowback and the criticism and all that stuff, everything that comes with something like this, I'm assuming some depression as well. You're feeling down on yourself. Was that almost harder to get over than the actual physical injuries that you were suffering that you had to, you know, you had to deal with the surgeries and whatnot?
Yeah, I think the physical injuries added to it. You know? Obviously, the mental. I mean, everything was mental. I mean, physical, yeah, I can deal with pain. I can deal with getting the surgeries done. And it was much needed. I've been needing them for, I've been fighting for 3 horrible shoulders, but I think it just added to the mental stress of what I had going on because I couldn't clear my mind. I couldn't even go out for a run. I mean, I was in a sling for 12 weeks total, you know, 6 weeks in the right shoulder, then 6 weeks in the left shoulder. I did them back to back. Couldn't do them at the same time. I wouldn't be able to feed myself or wipe my own ass. So I didn't think that was a good idea.
So one thing that's interesting is sometimes when we see someone in your situation, like they just kind of disappear. They don't do anything on social media. They don't post anything. They don't do interviews. You've kind of done the opposite. I know you haven't done a ton of interviews, but you know, you have your video blog series, that you're quite active in terms of updating and whatnot. You post on social media quite actively as well. Why did you decide to do it the opposite way than the typical person who's going through what you're going through?
I haven't hid from any of my decisions. You know, I made a mistake and I'm to it. I'm not going to hide from it. You know, I feel like that just shows weakness as well. It's just letting people involved in my life, you know, good or bad. I made a mistake and I was going to own up to it and I was going to let everyone in on my life and the challenges I have going on. And it's been tough and I wanted to show that, you know, no reason to hide.
One thing that I think about when I think of your situation is like you were on the verge of making history, 135 champ, trying to get the 125 champ, and then you lose the fight, and then this happens, and it all kind of like you could have gone down like legendary status, and now you go down this path. Does that, you know, come to mind a lot when you think about how the past year has gone, like how close you were to actually doing something that never has been done before, and now you're in this position where you have to completely rebuild your legacy and try to come back from this?
Oh, absolutely, man. I mean, that's kind of why I made the decision I made. I fucked up, you know. I decided to do something that wasn't good for myself. I got down to 4% body fat and decided to do something I knew I shouldn't have, you know, and it was tough. And I think the super hard was that the people that had to deal with it the most are the ones that I loved. you know, my family, my friends, my teammates, my coaches. I mean, I coach, especially Sam Calvita, caught so much flack for this and had of anything that I was doing. And that's what I feel the worst about. I mean, obviously I felt horrible for myself and going from, you know, being on top of the world to kind of plummet. But ultimately the people that I affected, you know, if they didn't have any decision making on what I did, it was all myself, and they had to deal with it just as much as I did, if not more.
So you tested positive for EPO. Why did you take EPO?
I took an anemia medication called Procrit, which the main ingredient was erythropoietin. It helps rebuild red blood cells. And when you become anemic, your red blood cells start to plummet. You lose energy. I was on a super strict, you know, 1600 calorie diet and working too hard. Just, I pushed my body to the extreme, man. I mean, no excuses. I made the mistake of wanting to do something that hadn't been done, and, you know, stole my soul to the devil. And now I gotta build myself back up and deal with it. Right.
Do you recall how many days or weeks before the fight you took this substance?
It's like 3 or 4 weeks, something like that. I was, you know, I was down, getting down to that bare minimum weight where everything was affecting me. I didn't want to wake up and train in the morning. I mean, I had to lose a bunch more weight, and I didn't want to go to the gym. I didn't want to run. I didn't want to do what I had to do. You know, I got drug testing that I decided to that I'd be able to be clear until the fight, and so I fucked up and made that decision. And I wanted to make it to the fight. I wanted to do something, like you said, that would have been unheard of to do. And I let it get the best of me.
And you mentioned, like, you know, your team, your coaches, your trainers didn't know about this. How did you even come to the conclusion that this was something to take? How did you find out about this?
I was looking into what was going on with me. I'm very scientific in the way I work with my body. I test my hormone levels. I do hair analysis. I diet. I'm super calorie. I mean, everything we do is down to a T, and I knew something was going wrong. And so when I went and got a blood test done, I knew I was coming to meet anemic. It felt like the short-term answer, you know, like if you're 3 or 4 weeks out, I didn't know how I was going to be able to bounce out from that. I wanted to be my best self when I stepped into that cage. And it was just the quickest route. Just let my bad judgment and pressure get to me.
And did you feel better after taking it? Did you sense that it worked?
Oh yeah, man! I was coming back to normal. You know, I got my hematocrit was down in the high 30s, and I was coming back to mid 40s, which your hematocrit is your red blood cell ratio. Yeah, I mean, you can definitely feel that I'm back to normal energy. Like, I didn't mind waking up in the morning and having to hit a run. I mean, I was running 5 days a week to make the weight on a certain diet, doing base, having to become a triathlete. I mean, I needed the energy to be able to even push to that.
And you didn't tell anyone. You went completely rogue here. You didn't tell anyone about this.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's even hard to talk about it now. How the heck about it and making a decision like that? Of course. I wish I would have, because I would have been obviously talked out of it, and I would have been told by my coach it was unneeded. I mean, shoot, looking back on it now, I'd have been better off to bail out of the fight. Look, man, I've been as upfront as possible with everything. I've admitted to it, and it's almost seemed like it's been a little bit harder at first, but coming around out, I'm happy that I relinquished the belt before even any kind of decisions were made by USADA. I admitted to it as soon as it was coming. And I wanted to put it behind me. I wanted to deal with what I did. You know, I made a mistake, and I feel like the best, what I've been taught handle it straight on instead of continuing to hide from something and run from it and cover it up. And now I'm moving past it, you know, and this is obviously, other than Chael's podcast, is the first time I've ever really sat down and talked about it. Enough excuses, enough bullshit about it, like what I did. It's time to move past it. It's time to start thinking about my career. I'm able to start. And I just came from practice. Cub Swanson was running practice at the training lab. So I'm able to start getting active. I'm able to start pushing forward. So obviously I owe so many sorries to a lot of people, but ultimately the people I love and the people that it affected the most, which is my teammates, my coaches, and my family. There's nothing else I can really say, you know?
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate the fact that you came out, you broke your own news. I remember when you posted that statement on Instagram. Was that important to you? Was that something that you said that you needed to do? You wanted to get out of it. So get out, you know, in front of it first so that, No one is saying anything in between the time that the statement comes out from USADA or the UFC or New York. And then you come back. It's very rare for someone to actually break this kind of news about themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I just knew that I made the mistake. It wasn't like it was an accident. I did it, you know, and, you know, cover up something shitty with another lie or hiding behind something. And, you know, man up to your mistakes. You know, I mean, everyone's got skeletons in their closets. Everyone makes mistakes. I feel like it's how you handle it and how you bounce back from it. Really show your true character. And if you're someone that says you've never made a mistake, I don't fucking trust you anyways, because everyone has, you know, I mean, now it's just me being able to save face and do whatever I possibly can and apologize and work my ass off. I mean, I know that there's no one in this game that'll work harder than me. I've proven that, and I will come back and I will be back on top. And that is a guarantee. It's only been, I got 13 months now, and I'm already hungry as shit. I'm getting back to training. I'm feeling good. Yeah, man. So I got to do nothing but look forward. I mean, I got to hash out the past right now. I figured this is the best way to do it. When you reached out to me, I felt like I was finally ready to come out of hiding a little bit, which that hiding was much needed. I got to spend a lot of time with my son. You know, I wouldn't call it a blessing in disguise, because I would never do this. I would never choose this, obviously, but I decided to roll with what I did and spend it for a positive for myself, right? I mean, every negative you do or every loss you take, you got to spin it and find the positives out of it. And for me, it's been that year, this last time I got to spend with my son growing up. He's about to be 2 years old. And that first year of his life was super hard for me to spend, because I was getting ready for another title fight. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that gets addicted to training or addicted to being the best. Why I stupidly did what I did, but I've used that as well as really getting myself into a business. You know, I'm actually really excited here. Next week I get to open up my first clean juice store. Clean juice is a USDA approved organic franchise that started in the East Coast, and I'm bringing to Southern California, and my store opens up next week, which is pretty exciting. I've been working my ass off to get that done, as well as I push it to the next level. And I'm the area developer for Southern California, so I'm looking to open 63 stores from San Diego to North LA. So,
whoa,
to say the least, I've definitely kept myself busy. I had to push for the next goal.
And where is the first one opening?
It's opening in Yorba Linda, where I'm living and where are close to our gym. Seems like the area that makes the most sense for me. But like I said, we're going to start from San Diego, go to North LA, and look to open up in the like 63 stores.
Can I, you know, when you mentioned the interview with Chael, which was great, and I thought it was a really fascinating conversation between two people who admire each other. That was back in June. One thing that I was wondering about, and I'm wondering if you'd be able to share, when you got the phone call, or at least were told about the positive test, what was that like? Who told you, and how did you react when you found out about this?
I got called from my manager, Tiki, and just devastating, you know. But also had that thought in the back of my mind that I already knew that I fucked up even going into the fight, you know. So wasn't surprised, but just, you know, life just turned upside down. Obviously, already dealing with a tough loss that I definitely believe I'm the better fighter, and a quick stoppage that I was – about, but all that just kind of went to the wayside when obviously this came out. And just not surprised, but devastating, you know. I remember I was actually at Whole Foods feeding my son breakfast, and just my whole world turned upside down, you know.
Were you close to pulling out of the fight, and do you think about that a lot, like, why didn't I just pull out of this fight if I was feeling sick?
Yeah, I mean, In my own head, I was, right? I never told anybody about it. I never told anybody how I felt. I'm sure it was probably seen a little bit in some of my practice, just being super cranky and not having the energy. But I, like I said, like you said at the beginning of this, I wanted to do something that hadn't been done. I was looking to get a second belt at a lower weight class and cutting a lot of weight. I'm one to really back out of a fight. And so, yeah, but it definitely crossed my mind, and I'm obviously kicking myself in the ass now. But look, man, like there's no excuses. I was weak. I made a horrible decision, and I'm going to continue to say that. I got a man up to it. I fucked up.
Have you been noting, you know, when things like this happen, people try to kick you when you're down. Colleagues, if you will, fellow competitors, fellow fighters. Are you writing a list of all the people who have talked about you and your situation, and are they part of the comeback? Do you have a list?
Oh, man, my weight class is getting super exciting right now. I don't really care about the shit people are talking because it's understandable. It's not kicking me when I'm down. I made a mistake. It'd be different if I was just down for some bad luck, a bad luck thing, but this was just a bad decision. So people have to talk as much shit as they want to, mouth me as much as they want, because in all fairness, I did make the mistake, and I did it choosingly. So that is what it is. But I do have a hit list, and obviously it's first and foremost is getting my belt back, the belt that I relinquished, the belt that I never lost a fight to. That's my – so whoever has that, and I'm hoping, you know, that's the fight I want most, that I want to come back for. But we got Jose Aldo coming down to 135s. You got Frankie Edgar coming down to 135s. Obviously, Dominic Cruz is limping around somewhere looking to get into that still. So it's so super exciting stuff, man. I have the who's who to jump in there and to beat and to reclaim my name and to get back on top and to prove that I am the best bantamweight of all time and just continue to show that inside the cage.
Did you watch the vacant title fight in June between Moraes and Cejudo? And if so, what was that like for you to see guys fighting for the belt you had to give up?
I didn't, man. It was too soon. I hadn't been watching fights at all, really. There's a couple fights, and then me being involved in Juan Archuleta's fights, because I've been in his corner for the last 4 years, and then helping him get ready for his last fight, which is another shitty situation I'll talk about. But no, man, it was too soon for me to want to watch that. I saw the highlights, and it kind of went down the way I thought it would go down. Marlon Moraes, I don't think can push for those 5-round fights. I think he's too muscle bound. I think he's got too much weight he's cutting to make the weight, and probably not doing it the right ways. And then I thought the better fighter, but wouldn't be able to last. Cejudo's got that wrestler mentality that'll push no matter what happens. But yeah, not exactly how I predicted the fight go down, but I figured that's kind of the outcome that would happen.
What's the situation you're talking about with Juan Archuleta?
Oh yeah, Juan Archuleta. He had a super big fight. He was in that big tournament for Bellator.
Yeah,
he decided to fight the champion first, Patricio Pitbull, in the first round of the tournament, which we thought was a very smart idea. We could get paid as a champion all the way through the tournament, and I think Juan matches up with him really well. You know, that was the first camp that we solely focused on Juan. Juan's been one of those amazing training partners. It's always been in my corner, out and just kind of being involved with my fight camps is what's made him so much better, and working with the coaches that I work with. But this camp was the first time we've really sat down in week camp for him, got prepared for Patricio. And then the night of the fight, I showed up, and the commission comes back and tells me that I'm not allowed to be in his corner, that because of the fighter and for what I was suspended for, that I wasn't allowed to corner him. And that was 2 hours before the fight. And so for him to have to deal with that, you know, I was his main coach. It's for him every day. We were game planning. I mean, Pitbull came out and was the exact fighter we trained for. And I can tell when Juan was out there, he was flustered. He, you know, everything was taken out from underneath him right before the fight. I mean, Dwayne Ludwig was taken out of my corner 2 weeks before a fight. And we so focused for this, it would mess me up too. You know, that's a mental mind fuck that shouldn't have had to deal with, that once again came from the mistake, you know. And that one ate me alive, and I felt super bad for it, because that was his time to shine. It was his time to get the belt, and a decision that I made is going to continue to affect the people that I love.
Your old friend Uriah Faber is back. Is he someone that you'd like to fight upon returning?
Yeah, man. I mean, it makes sense, right? It's a big fight. I think he's got a very tough fight ahead of him right now. I don't know if he's going to get through that one. It seems like a real tough fight for him to win. I think he's got a tough opponent that we'll see. But yeah, I mean, obviously that'd be a great one to continue to smash Team Alpha Male and show them how much better and this decision I made to move was the right one.
And, you know, they've accused you of taking bad substance in the past. Can you say definitively that this was the first time in your career that you took something that was banned?
Absolutely, man. I've been under a microscope since this test. I got alerted from USADA that they went all the way back to when they first started testing. I think it was like the Sensel or the Cruise Fire. I just got email after email saying that you have been tested. You have been tested. You have been tested. And they went back and retested all my old samples, obviously, which is completely understandable to make sure that there was nothing that slid by. Yeah, man. I mean, everything's out in the open. I mean, like I said, I'm under a microscope and I'm going to continue to be. I've been continued to get drug tested left and right, which is completely understandable. I got nothing to hide.
I really appreciate you doing this, TJ. And most importantly, you know, we live in an era where someone gets caught, an athlete gets caught, and we're given a bunch of excuses. And this is why I did this. And, you know, they try to bend the truth. You have done anything but that. You came out right away. You were the first to break the news, like I said, and you continue to sit here and own up to it. And I know this can't be easy. So I have a lot of respect for the way you're handling this.
I appreciate it. I was nervous to jump on this podcast, to be honest. You got to deal with the head on, and I've done it the whole time. So I appreciate you saying that. And I can't wait to get back in there and show my fans that I'm still here to reign, and I'm going to be the champion once again, and I'm going to do it fast. I'm looking to fight a ton when I get back. I'll be 35 years old when I get back, and I'll definitely be hungry, so I'll be looking to fight as much as possible, and I want my title. I don't want a tune-up fight. I don't want to come back and need someone to tune up with. I want the best. You know, I want to, like I said, those names I've listed off, I mean, I got the who's who to fight, and I don't want to take no easy fight. I'm going to be ready. Who I really want, who no one's even, I really feel like, is Mayweather wants a UFC star that's good at striking. I got a whole year to reinvent myself to become a boxer. I got the who's who in the boxing world. I can train with the Lomachenkos, the Terrence Crawfords. You know, he ain't going to be able to wear me out and finish me because of my cardio. I think that's a very intriguing fight. I'd love to get that Mayweather fight, not even for the money, just for the fact of proving us UFC fighters got what it takes to get in that ring. I think Conor McGregor did a great job of showing what we can do, and that our movements are awkward and that it's tough for them to deal with. And I've seen it myself in the boxing world. You know, I go and train out at Joel Diaz's out in Indio. I've trained with the Lomachenkos. I've seen Terrence Crawford's camp. You know, I think that'd be a super intriguing thing to get involved in. And I got the time to do it. It'd be a lot healthier on my shoulders right now too. I'm ready to get back to hitting mitts, and that's what I want. You heard it here first.
Okay. Wow. How about that? Dropping us with that bombshell right at the very end. Thank you for doing this, TJ. Good luck to you, and I hope you have a speedy recovery with the two shoulder surgeries.
I appreciate it, man, and I'll be talking to you here in a short amount of time. A year goes by fast.
All right. Yes, we look forward to that. So there he is, TJ Dillashaw. I've been bothering him for quite some time over the past few months. I very much appreciate him coming on, and honestly, I appreciate the way he's handled all of this. It really says a lot about him, and you can say anything that you want about the way in which, you know, he got caught or what he used, anything like that, but man, he has owned up to it every step of the way, and I do think that is important to note. He has put out the blueprint, quite frankly, on how to deal with something like this, so I think he should be proud of that. All right, without further ado, let us move along to our next guest. As I said at the top of the show, I've been doing this particular program for 10 and a half, almost 11 years, to be exact. June of 2009 was our very first episode. It started with AOL, it moved along to SB Nation, and now it is here with ESPN. And as I said at the top, we have been lucky to have the biggest names in the history of mixed martial arts on this program at least once. More often than not, they've been on multiple times. We've had some of the biggest names in the sport, from Hoist Gracie to Randy Couture, Chuck Liddell to Conor McGregor. All the biggest names in the history of the sport have been on this program. But there has been one name over the years that has eluded me for one reason or another. She has refused time and again to appear on this program. And quite frankly, I didn't know why. In fact, the last time I actually did an interview with her was back in 2011. 8 years ago was the last time I spoke to this individual. But our long nightmare is over, my friends. It is over. It is actually happening. For the first time ever in the history of this show, the great Gina Carano will be on. But before we say hello to Gina Carano, here's a little quick trip down memory lane of Gina and I through the years.
with Gina Carano. Gina, how's it going?
Hi, good, good. I don't ever get used to it. I don't ever get used to fighting. I don't ever get used to being public or attention. I just kind of, I'm awkward all the time.
Right. And apparently so am I, according to the internet. But anyhow,
are you?
That's what they say. I don't know. They say I'm awkward. Yes, it's true.
Oh, sorry.
Friday are the weigh-ins. Look at that stomach. Looking good. Are you, is everything in line? We're not going to see any other drama?
I don't think we're going to see any other drama. I mean, I'm doing pretty good right now,
Does that have, like, an awkward vibe to me?
No, but you hold the microphone here really long.
I haven't quite got it down when to switch over.
Were you doing the worm, a push-up, or were you just lying on the ground?
I was doing the worm, which I can do.
Good.
I can do the worm. Right, no.
Okay.
But I, maybe next interview.
All
right. We have to build up the worm. We got to establish a little bit more of a relationship for that.
See, I messed up the mic thing again. I talked and didn't bring it over. Do you notice that?
He's got a complex now, and I didn't mean to give it to him. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I forgive you.
Good to see you always.
Yes. As always, take care.
Okay.
Hopefully it won't be another 2.5 years before we see you again.
One eternity later.
Here I am shooting my shot with the great Gina Carano. I'm not sure if you know this, but I do a show called Ariel Helwani's MMA Show for ESPN, the worldwide leader. I've been doing it now for 1.5 years, and prior to that I did it for 9 years. And yet you won't come on. And so here I am formally and cordially inviting you to appear on my show in the very near future.
And there she is, in the flesh, Gina Carano, finally, 10.5 years. You're
Hi.
Here. How are you?
Do I get to see you too, or do I just have to look at myself right now?
Just yourself. Just look at yourself the entire time. I just can't believe it. I don't want to look at myself. There we are.
Yay. Okay.
There we are.
I like this. Hi.
Gina, where have you been?
I've been in movie land.
I've been filming.
Yeah, I've been filming a lot. I was so nervous to come on here, and I want to tell you the whole reason throughout all of these. Oh, yeah, are we going to jump right into it, right?
Okay.
The whole reason was because I always wanted to come on and tell you something great, I wanted to tell you, like, okay, I'm ready for a comeback, or, I'm really super proud of this movie or something. So it took a while to get there, but so I'm here now.
Well, for me, it was like I would see you do interviews with other people, and I was like, wait a second, did I offend Gina over the years? Why do I see her doing stuff with other people? Why can't she at least just come on the show? We'll talk, we'll reminisce, we'll preview her upcoming film. I mean, you've been in some big films, Haywire, all this stuff, and yet I always got the stiff arm from the team, and I didn't understand why.
It was more about I think it was more, it's easier to talk to people when maybe they haven't been following you so closely. So it was easier to talk to people that knew nothing. But I know you've been watching everything, so I wanted it to be genuine, and I also wanted it to be in a good place when I did get to, speak to you. So
8 years.
And I wanted to be proud when I came on the show and be like, okay, this is what I'm doing. And, it's been about like almost a decade in the film industry, and I've had really highs and really lows, but right now I feel like I'm on a high. So I feel proud to speak and to talk about the stuff that I'm doing.
I won't belabor this point, but did you know that you were like the only fighter in the history of MMA to never appear on the show in the 11 years? Did that ever like get to your, I've said it a lot, but I was wondering if you actually knew this.
To be honest, like, wait, where do you keep on disappearing to? Because I don't think this is fair. I think we have to have, like, even...
You want the whole time. Okay, I'll be up there the whole time. I don't think people want to see me. They see me enough, but sure.
No, I need to see you, because then I'm just talking to myself.
Okay, fair enough.
What was your question? Oh, no, actually, to be honest, I want to be really honest. I don't really watch your show.
Oh my God. That's the most amazing thing anyone's ever said to me. Please continue.
The way I communicate is like, I watch your Instagrams,
sure.
I watch your Twitter, and, usually when I get to know someone, I won't even really watch their movies. I like to kind of keep it like that. So I feel like we're like friends. So I don't really like,
Okay.
But so you look like you've been doing great.
Yeah, things are pretty good. I mean, since the last time we spoke, I work for ESPN. I have three children since the last time we spoke, so a lot's happened in my life. Things are good. But, you know, it's funny. You know, I always play that clip. I mentioned it. Like, I was even talking to my wife about it yesterday, and she's like, oh, I've heard you talk about this clip, the one at the very beginning, which I mistakenly put as 2009 on Instagram. It was actually 2008, May of 2008. And I don't even think you realize why that clip is so important to me. And I'd like to tell you why it was so important to me, because that's when I started. I started doing this really in like April of 2008 is when I started doing on-camera interviews. So that was literally a month in. And I had just come back from Las Vegas. I went to Extreme Couture in Vegas and I interviewed Forrest Griffin. And it was a very strange interview. Like, he kept touching me and he kept like pushing me and was very physical and touchy-feely with me. And I posted that interview the morning that I saw you at that Elite XC press conference in Times Square. And all the comments underneath, I remember this website, MMA Mania, posted it. Everything underneath was like, this guy sucks. This guy is the worst interview. He is the most awkward interview. He should not be interviewing fighters. He's such a scrawny punk, blah, 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 blah. And I felt so down. I was like, I'm done. I'm not, who needs this? I'm not going to deal with this. I'm not going to take this. This is horrible. I felt so low. And then I went to that press conference and to the naked eye, nothing special happened. But then we had that thing with the microphone. And what it did for me was like, you need to stop overthinking this. You need to just be yourself. You need to just have fun. And the fact that you kind of just like talked about how weird I was and awkward I was actually made me feel a lot better and made my confidence skyrocket. And that for me was a turning point early on in my career. So that's why it meant so much. And that's why talking to you meant so much. And I wanted to tell you that because you helped me indirectly. I don't think you knew that you helped me so much. But that interview for me is a real turning point in my life and career. And so I wanted to thank you for it all these years later.
And that means the absolute world because, well, I hope you know I'm just as awkward and uncomfortable. And I think the whole world knows. Is that so? Hopefully, I'm just out here making a lot of awkward, uncomfortable people realize that their dreams can be reached. Because I'm out here doing it, so
yes, you're an inspiration to us all.
No,
okay. Now that we've talked about all that, now I have some serious questions to ask you. And things are going great. Mandalorian, Disney Plus, everyone's very excited. Cara Dune, there's a lot of exciting things, but there's some unanswered questions, right? Cara, sorry, I'm Canadian. Cara Dune, is it Cara Dune? Sorry.
Yeah, no, but the entire world mispronounced it, and it's kind of become like, I actually think I made Pedro Pascal pee his pants in an interview. Like, literally, I think he might have peed his pants, because he's like, oh my gosh, everybody's saying your name wrong, and I'm like, nobody says my name right except for me, which is
okay,
kind
of
so
like Cara Dune, like Carano, yeah. Cara Dune. Okay, and there she is. The aforementioned Cara Dune. Okay, so if you don't mind, I would just like to go back a few years, and then we'll get to the stuff here. You have some time, right? You're not going anywhere. You're not that busy today,
no,
correct?
I'm all yours, yeah.
Okay. Why have you never fought again?
Oh, right to that. Well, so after the cyborg fight, I got in a car because it was in San Jose, and I got in a car, and I drove down the one, and I went all the way to San Diego, and I was just thinking, you know, what am I going to do with my life? That really didn't go as well. I just fought the best in the business. I just, you know, I don't think that I was entirely ready at that moment to have fought her, but I just remember thinking that all those years, like I remember there was a big fight between Leila Ali and somebody else, and it was like the $1 million fight, and it never transpired. And then I would always see like these, you know, big fights never happen. And I just knew that that's not what was going to happen with me. I was going to fight Cyborg, whether I was ready or not. And so I did. So definitely wasn't how, I mean, I feel like if I could have just gotten into that second round, I feel like my nerves would have calmed down and the adrenaline dump I had would have just, everything would have calmed down. But, my mom used to tell me when I used to play basketball, I would probably foul out in the first quarter because there was four quarters at that time. I don't know what there is now, but there was four quarters. And she would be like, you need to take about four laps around the entire high school before you get back in there, you know, before you go in the first quarter, because my adrenaline just gets so high. And so if I don't get to a place where I'm completely exhausted, even in acting, to be honest, I just kind of like, it's just too much energy. So I feel like if I was going to make it into that second round, I would have relaxed a little bit. But that didn't happen. So on my way to, you know, San Diego thinking, you know, this is the biggest thing in my life. And at those moments, you think, And I see a lot of fighters now, and I see a lot of actors, and anybody who does anything, they have this moment of it's the end of the world. And so I was having like one of those end of the world moments, but I can tell you now that I've had so many end of the world moments that you get past the end of the world and things somehow end up working out and it ends up being okay. So for those people out there who might be experiencing an end of the world thing, it's not the end of the world until your heart stops beating. So stick in there. So I was having one of those moments, and then 3 days later, I took an elbow to the top of my, I think it was my left eyebrow, and all the blood was like seeping down into my eye. And this agent, who wasn't really even my agent, he decided to be my agent after this phone call, called and said, Steven Soderbergh wanted to meet with me. And I said, well, I'm in San Diego. And he's like, that's fine. You'll hop on a, you know, he'll hop on a train and he'll come out and you guys can go to lunch. And of course, my mom was like, all the horror stories you hear about like directors in Hollywood. And she's like, no, I'm going with you. And I was like, Mom, I can probably literally kick his ass. I think I'm okay. So then we had a conversation, and he said that, it was a 4-hour conversation. And he said, look, I don't have a script yet and I don't have anything, but I think you're interesting. And I think, I'd like to make a real life action movie off of you. And so that happened just the week after, just a couple of days after. I felt like it was kind of one of those end of the world things. So that was my entry into doing film.
And that was Haywire, right?
That was Haywire.
And do you feel like if that wouldn't have happened, if you didn't get this meeting with this great director, that you would have stayed in MMA? Was this some sort of distraction that allowed you to exit the sport?
Oh, for sure. No, I definitely. Well, I mean, there's not a day that still doesn't go by that I don't get down there on the treadmill. I have a heavy bag in my, you know, I have a heavy bag in my garage, and all my best friends are fighters still. There's not like a day that goes by that, you know, I don't think about when I'm working out, at least. I'm like, there's not somebody I'm kicking in the head or some sort of like scenario. Because I did, the sport really did, doing Muay Thai changed everything for me. It took me from not a very good situation in Las Vegas, from this like little apartment building where everybody was so strung out where I was living that they had taken all the, you know, the smoke detectors out, and I thought like the FBI and like my family was involved or something. There's some, you know, there's a lot, and I've lost a lot of friends to where we were living at. And when I was 19 years old, so when I started fighting, it just focused me. You know, I was supposed to be going to college for psychology, and that wasn't really like, it was like doing nothing for me. And so when I started fighting, it zeroed in all of this energy that I had and put it towards like, well, you know, like training, and I just became absolutely obsessed with it. So Muay Thai was definitely my first love, and fighting saved my life in a huge way. And so I think that, yes, I would have just definitely kept on fighting had it not been for that opportunity that I got. However, at the time, you have to understand, like at the time, there wasn't so much, there was nowhere else to go. I had reached like the top. And so here was a whole new challenge in front of me in this movie business that I feel like I could really, you know, get into. And it was challenging. It was hard. And I'm still not a natural at it. Like, it's very, like, it destroys you sometimes. It's just as hard as training. It's just a different thing. And I, you know, I just kind of let myself like go away with that for, and I'm still in that, in the acting world.
Did you want to be an actress, or did he convince you? Like, was this something that was on your radar, or was it just something that was presented to you, and because you had just suffered this loss, you were like, yeah, maybe this is something I could do now?
I don't know. No. I always thought that, because I don't know why everybody tells fighters this, or anybody tells anybody this, like, you know, they're like, okay, when are you going to go Hollywood? Like, that's such a, like, easy thing to do. By the way, that's like almost nearly an impossible thing to do. Like, So when I was younger, or when I was fighting, they would say that those things to me, and I would be like, that never even crossed my mind. And if that is going to like come to me, it's going to be because the right person finds me. And those were literally my thoughts when anybody would ask me, when are you going to go to Hollywood? So, those were, and it just so happened that one of the best directors in this generation, came and found me. So there's certain things that I do put out there. And that I still in here, like that I'm putting out there now, that I don't know. I don't like to come off as like a weird energy person or anything, but I do think that things, you call out to things in your heart and they happen. Like where you're at, Ariel, like I think you really wanted to be who you are right there. And you're making it happen through everything that you've been through. You stayed with it. You stuck with it. And now, I mean, you got that big ass microphone in front of you that you don't even have to hold.
Isn't it wonderful? Yes, I don't have to worry about holding it too long at the subject's face. That is a good point. I never thought of it that way, but that is a good point. As my voice cracks, my palms are very sweaty right now. How about you, Gina? Same thing.
I'm so sweaty. I shouldn't have worn a sweatsuit.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
My comfortable stuff on. My hat is my comfort blanket. You know, I've got these little hand things, but I'm still. It's really like it's really nice to talk to you.
It is. It is. Okay, so back to my questions. True or false? Did they dub your voice in Haywire? Was that not really your voice?
That is true.
Why did they do that?
Well, I think what happened was so I didn't know anything about reshoots. So I went away for reshoots, I went away to Thailand to go kind of like clear my head because something kind of, all right, well, we're just running it. Something kind of traumatic happened right before Haywire. I had a miscarriage. It wasn't like an on purpose thing. It was a very accidental thing. And so I was in a very fragile, I think, position moving into Haywire as it was. And then when we went and shot Haywire, I just gave it everything. I was able to ignore what was happening in the world. I was able to ignore everything, all the pain I was feeling inside. And I literally just dove straight into this movie and I didn't come up for a breath of fresh air. So after we got done shooting Haywire, I came out and all of those things started hitting me of what I had been through right before we went and shot it. So I went to Thailand and I went to heal, basically, emotionally and physically, and just get my head straight. And I remember looking in the mirror in Thailand thinking, like, who are you? Like, what happened? You know, and I was devastated. So I, during that time, Steven Soderbergh and Relativity were going back and forth with like creative differences for this movie. And they were starting to drag me and throw my name in the dirt and tell them, you know, like, well, you got a first time actress. What do you expect? And all this stuff. And so I think that in an awful way, I wasn't given an opportunity to finish the film. Because I did, after 4 weeks, I came back and we did reshoots. But for some reason, I wasn't allowed to go in and finish it. And I don't think that was anything malicious, but I think it was something that gave me a hard time from the get-go in this business. Is my entire voice was robbed of me. And you're going to take a already kind of uncomfortable, awkward, shy person who's just trying to do their best in life and has been through something a little bit traumatic, and then take away their voice and not let them finish a project they gave blood, sweat, and tears to. And it was hard. But saying that, he gave me the opportunity, Soderbergh did. And where I'm now is, I mean, Jon Favreau came up to me, because most of the people in this business know that's what happened. They don't know the depths of it, like I just told you, but he came up to me and he said, I don't like what's happened with you and to you in this business. And The Mandalorian is, we're going to make it right on this.
Wow. To hear that from Jon Favreau, that must feel amazing. First off, I'm very sorry to hear about that. I didn't know that you went through that, the miscarriage. So I'm very sorry about that. And that just, now that I know what happened with the voice and you're coming off the loss and everything you've been through, was there a point where you're just like, screw all of this? I don't want anything to do with Hollywood. I don't want anything to do with the limelight. I just want to go away. I don't want anything to do with anyone.
I did that. I have done that. what I really like, I mean, I really love fighting. What I don't like about it is you have to be so accessible and you have to be so yourself all the time. And I don't really like to be accessible all the time. I like to disappear. And I like to go find myself in weird, strange places and where nobody knows who you are. And just, you know, I've traveled this world. I've done a lot. Like, I do a lot alone, and I don't know if that makes me a weirdo, but I just think I just like people's natural reactions before they know that, you know, you're an actress or you're a fighter. I just kind of like to know people's real reactions. But what was the question?
I was wondering, you know, I know you've been through a lot, so I was wondering if you soured on Hollywood at that point where, you know, they take your voice away and you're like, I don't want to continue down this path. Maybe this world isn't for me, Hollywood, and maybe I go back to fighting. Because it was around this time where there were some rumors. I remember, I think there was an announcement at an event in Dallas, a Strikeforce event. They said you were coming back. You were going to fight Sara Dallaglio, and everyone was excited. You were even on the poster. And so I guess I'll ask, like, what happened there? Why didn't you come back?
Well, so there were so many times in my life that I wanted to come back. And there's so many times I was writing the fine line between being an athlete and being, well, to be honest, most of the time in my head, I was a fighter. I wasn't an actor for a long time, you know, maybe up until a couple years ago. So I would constantly think, okay, I'll just get through this movie and then I'll come back, or I'll just do this and I'll come back. And I have so many dues I need to pay. I came in on such a hot, like, director and an incredible, like, movie in Haywire that, like, I don't know. I just felt like I needed to, put in my dues. And so every single time though, I would try to come back for a comeback, like something, some crazy job that you, like, you as an actor just wish would just come through, just came through. And so the specific time I was training in New Mexico with Greg Jackson's team, who I adore, and I had a really great time there. I stayed there for about 3 months, and I was gonna go do this big comeback, and I think I was gonna fight Sarah. What had happened with that is I was headed to Las Vegas. And the day before, it's really funny how things work. Julie Kedzie and me were sparring. And I was nervous about my weight and I was all that, but I really shouldn't have been, because I was like 10, I was 10 off, and that would have been fine. And we're like 3 weeks out. I think we were 3 weeks out. So I was totally good there. But me and Julie were sparring. And Julie, by the way, she freaking kicked me straight in the right here. She kicked me straight right there. And I am not a bleeder. So when I bleed, like, it's like, oh shit, you know, and I just gushed blood and I felt like all sorts of sideways. And I had to get on the plane a couple hours later. And I was just like, all right, well, Julie caught me. That's hilarious. And then I went and got on the plane and I went home and I was looking at my mom. We were at Mary Callender's, actually, and I was, like, eating turkey and salad because I was still cutting weight. And my mom was like, you don't look so good. And when somebody you love tells you that, which is maybe why it's good to stay away from, you know, family before you fight, it just kind of creeps in your head. But I ended up going to the doctors, and they checked me out, and I had gotten the concussion and vertigo and the whole, you know, the whole line of stuff. And I was like, I was just already just emotionally kind of like not ready to go back. And more like the fight doesn't bother me. It's more so of like the nerves of being out there on this big stage that always affected me and made me. So emotionally, that is always like my biggest giant. Fighting a girl, like anyone, I've sparred with some of the best in the world. And, you know, sometimes you take your licks and sometimes you're like, damn, I did pretty good there. So like, that doesn't bother me, the physical stuff, but like, it's all the, it's like sometimes people aren't really built for this, this stage that you guys put them on. So that's what happened with that one. And a couple other times, I think I tried to come back, and then those other times I tried to come back, it was like, oh, well, we got Deadpool and this. And then, and I had a finally 2 years ago, just, you know, I decided to tell myself, well, like, if you're not going to take yourself seriously as an actress, how do you expect anybody on this planet to take you seriously? And so I got back into acting classes and I started researching, and I'm obsessive. Like, I think I've been to the theater 3 times this week because I'm off. I'm shooting season 2, but like, it's all I want to do is put out something that I'm like really proud of. Hopefully someday that I've created. So that's like my new passion. But
okay, well, we skipped over a lot there, so let me go back I can. I think I'm asking this question on behalf of every MMA fan on the planet, because when they made that announcement, there's a famous GIF that came from it, and that's the one of you biting your lip. What are you thinking of when you are biting your lip on camera there? You know the one I'm talking about, right? That's when they said you were coming back, and there's the one that everyone always posts anytime something happens about you. But I've always wanted to know what you were thinking. Like, why did you bite your lip in that moment?
You know, biting my lip has always been a way. I'm naturally like a shyer. Like I think I'm shy. I think it's always been a way to control my face.
Okay.
Like if you bite something, you know, like the inside of your cheeks or your lips, which I'm not going to do, but because then they'll be forced. But like, it's just a way of controlling something when you feel nervous. So that's all that has ever been.
You know, that's a thing, right? You know, that gets posted like a million times anytime you do something relevant to the world of MMA.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad. I mean, I think I'm glad.
You've been immortalized by that one lip biting scene. Now, the other one that I've been dying to ask you, again, I haven't had the opportunity to talk to you since. I'll just keep subtly mentioning that here and there. 2014, there were some intense rumors that you were in talks with the UFC to fight Ronda Rousey. How close were you to actually fighting Ronda Rousey and fighting in the UFC?
So I remember Dana had finally called after all these years, not called me, but like called my representative. And they said, you know, they'd like to sit down and have a conversation. So, I mean, I actually met Dana long ago when he was doing the WEC, and I was fighting for Strikeforce, and they had said, you know, him and Lorenzo came in, and I went to their offices, and they said, hey, you know, you don't have to fight the cyborg chick, you know, why don't you come over here and fight for the WEC, and why don't you fight for us? And I was like, well, I've got a contract, and you know, Scott Coker's always been pretty good to me, and they said, we can get you out of it, you know. We won't be able to directly like be involved, but we'll finance it. And then I just thought, you know, I said that I signed this contract, and that's my word on there. And I said to the people and all the fans that I said I was going to fight Cyborg. So, I just didn't want to get into like this messy, like legal battle that, where I had said I was going to do something. All, you know, before the Cyborg fight, and then never let it happen. So I was just, and I think that was my last fight on that contract. So I ended up fighting Cyborg and kind of brushing that off. But then cut to like, I don't know, when Ronda Rousey became popular, I remember they finally called for a meeting, and I walked in, they were like in this restaurant, and they looked like two big, you know, muscly guys at a table in like the middle of like Hollywood. And I remember thinking, what took you guys so long? I've been not like, you know, what took you so long? And so they were like, okay, well, you know, we'd love to offer you $1 million. We'd love to, you know, have that fight. And I was like, well, that sounds great. I'm going to need you to do me a favor then, because I've been acting now, and I'm not, you know, active in any gym. So it's going to take me, you know, you're going to have to give me some time to build a team and go join a team, which is not an easy thing, as sure as all the fighters know in this, you know, you have to find a team or build one that's going to like be into what you're doing. And if you haven't been like actively a part of anything, you know, you can walk in as Gina Carano or whoever, and you know, you still have to like, you know, find the people that are going to really be there for you. And that takes time. So I told him, you know, you got to just be able to sit on this for about 6 months, Dana, you know, like you can't say anything, and let me like get situated with that in mind, because that sounds great. And I'd love to do it. And so it was a nice dinner, and we all left, you know, positive. And I left stoked, and I was like, okay, well, this makes sense. This is my moment to come and be back in there. And then, like the next day, Dana was out there talking about me and like saying, you know, talking about my name and like telling the people that he was going to sign me. And I don't even have a team yet. And I was like, that's not what we discussed. You're supposed to give me at least 6 months to kind of like find a team. Like, and then he started trying to put on the pressure through the media. And then, it just really kind of, it was a bummer because I told him over a text message, you know, like that's not what we talked about. I need time. I can't just like, you know, now I'm going to walk into a gym and people know that's what I'm doing. I need to build trust and I need to find people. And, so then, he kept on doing that. And I'm still, you know, still kind of searching for a team and like feeling all that pressure. And then he sent me a text message that said, this bitch isn't something us around, like, you know, effing us around or something like that. And I sent a text message back. I think that you sent that to the wrong person. And he said, I don't think I did. And that was the last conversation that we had over text message, because I don't think that that was like the kind of environment I wanted to come back into. And so I just cut all communication after that text. And then I remember seeing him when Mike Tyson and my dad were getting honored at a sports hall of fame in Las Vegas. And he did come over and he genuinely apologized. But yeah, I just don't think that even $1 million, you shouldn't, you know, when people hold money over your head, which they have done since I was a little girl, it's just never been a turn on for me. If it aligns, I don't have a problem with authority. I just have a problem with abused authority is my thing. So that was the end of that conversation.
Wow. I had no idea about that. Wow, that is wild. So is that when the UFC dream ended in your mind, that you would never fight there?
Well, I mean, UFC, yeah. But, you know, there was always Scott Coker and there was all these things. But then I really, really have enjoyed doing this acting world. When I came up and when I was fighting, it was kind of like a known thing. Like you had to have a side hustle. You had to, you know, and I've always believed in, if I make myself to where they need me, then I can do what I want. And so to not rely on anybody, to not rely on promotions, and to make myself somebody to where they need me, I learned that early on. So I don't know. And then I don't know. And then I don't know how I even got here. But
I remember tweeting you the week of UFC 184, when it was Ronda Katsingano and Holly Holm, Raquel Pennington, the first time ever that it was two females headlining and co-headlining the card, so four in total, and asking what you thought of it all. And as you saw this actual explosion of women's MMA, and it happened with a new person, with Ronda Rousey, and she became the face of women's MMA. And I know you used to never like that term. You never wanted to be called the face of women's MMA, but you were. You were the face of women's MMA. You got it on broadcast television. You were the first one. You were the pioneer. I know there were some before you, but you were the one that broke through those doors. What did that feel like, watching that happen without you, not being a part of that? Were you happy? Were you sad? Were you missing out? You know, you're missing out on all of this. Did you feel like it was an extension of you? How were you coming to terms with that?
I think for moments in my life, I have been, I've always felt so silly because there was always girls that came before me. You know, there was Debbie Purcell, Erin Tohill, Shayna Baszler, Marlis Conan was there before me. But I mean, it was so small. So, Angela Parr was in Muay Thai before me, Lucia Riker, you know, there's like so many incredible women, female athletes that came before me. So at the time I felt so silly. I didn't understand this whole face of anything. But now when I look back, I really am genuinely proud to have played that role in it. And I'm still proud to have played the role of, you know, I did want to be the first woman in the UFC. And when I watched that, it hurt in a way. But at the same time, like, look at my life now. So it was a dream that didn't get to happen. But I was able to open up doors for women to walk into gyms and make it be easier. And I really, I'll always cherish that.
Why does this make you emotional? Is this sadness? that's coming out, or happiness?
It's, I know how hard it, how hard it was to walk into gyms. You know, like there was moments where they would tell, you know, I just went in and I kept my mouth shut and I just did my job. But there was moments where they'd be like, oh my gosh, it smells like fish in here. Like, get him out of here. Get him out of here. Like talking about the other women's who I, the women who I needed to, as training partners. And so, I mean, I've seen how hard it was. And now when you go to like a Muay Thai place, or you go to BJJ and you get to see like these little girls just kicking ass, that's where I feel like I've actually made some sort of difference in history. And even Rhonda herself said that when she saw me and Julie do that, you know, when we, when she saw us fight on, you know, Elite XC, that it just clicked in some of their brains that we could do this too, and we could do it in a big way. And so I might have not gotten credit for things, but that's just fine, because there's women out there who have a bigger dream now, and it's easier to live and to, you know, really just go for something. Whereas I missed out on doing it, but they can.
When Rhonda lost and then lost again and then left the sport, I always wondered if it brought up old memories, bad memories for you, because then your name got brought up again about how, like, when the going got tough, she left. And I think people, without knowing about the movie story, thought, all right, you lost your first fight and then you left. Did you feel like those old memories, that old wound was reopened when she lost to Amanda Nunes for the second time and then never came back again, and the way she handled it because she was being related to the way you left the sport?
You know, I've never really, me and Rhonda are not the same. We've got very different, I think, personalities. But I think that something you have to respect in that woman is that she's given it everything. And so on every single one of those fights that you saw her out there and handling the pressure of the big shows and, like, you know, performing basically and through the hate, I have nothing but respect in her. And even still, she went and started doing that in, you know, the WWE, and people still kind of, like, some people just love to hate some people. I don't see it. I mean, I don't know her personally. I always think that you have to look someone in their eyes before you decide how you feel about them. I've only met her once, so I don't really know her, but I see the hard work that she's put in and the powerful personality that she is. So I don't, yeah, I don't know.
Only met her once.
Yeah.
What were the circumstances surrounding that?
She, it was before a fight. That we were both attending. And I remember I'd heard of her, and then, like, she walked up to me, and I was wearing, like, stilettos. I was wearing massive heels, and she walked up to me and she said, "You're not that big."
Sizing you up?
Yeah. Well, no, she did it with a very sweet smile. And I was like, "Hi, Rhonda. It's nice to meet you." And I gave her a big hug, and it was just, it was not like a egotistical, it was like a mutual respect, and it was really like a nice moment. And that's the only time I've ever met her.
Wow. So you also mentioned, like, a couple of years ago you decided you were done. And I know Scott, when he took over Bellator, Scott Coker, there was some talks of maybe you coming back and fighting for him again. How close was that to happening?
I definitely have had contracts, and I just kind of think that you can't do that. This half-assed. You have to be in it, fighting and acting. And if there's anything you want to do successfully, I think you have to give it your full heart. And if there's anything I've realized, I think that my heart is definitely, if you've got a movie and if you got a fight and you choose the movie, then you know where your heart is at. So that took a long time for me to realize. But now I'm completely obsessed. I'm absolutely obsessed with the entire thing of storytelling and also maybe hopefully kind of, you know, creating an atmosphere in the future where I think we see a lot of our veterans and a lot of our favorite fighters that want to be done, and they have nowhere to go. And I think to kind of create a place where I've been through all of that, and if I can help in any way in my future storytelling and my future dreams, then I'd love to help that, because I mean, I learned from like scratch, but I have all these ways that I learned, and I can speak to people in a way that I think that might help them. So say if I was directing a movie, which is definitely a dream of mine, I get stunt coordination and I get stunt scenes and I get all of that. My biggest thing is I want to tell a really genuinely good movie. So, or a good story. And so I think that's there's a very good way to incorporate those two. And there's a very good way to incorporate the people and the fighters that we love so much. But I think they need to be handled with somebody who knows where they're coming from. So hopefully I'll be able to do something like that in the near future.
I will admit, amid these sort of talks that maybe Scott was going to be able to get you to fight again, I noticed, not to say that I'm, you know, looking at these things, you know, with a, you know, going through them with a fine tooth comb, but I did notice that, you know, I remember way back in the day, you and Kevin Ross were an item, and then you announced that you were back together. And I was like, oh, she's training more. I noticed on Instagram you were training more. You're dating a fighter again. It felt like the fight game was kind of drawing you back. But now I don't see that as much. I don't see the training as much. I see the movie stuff as much. So it seemed like there was a moment there where you were seriously considering this. Like it felt like you were more a part of the fight world at events, things like that. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no. You really have been watching. yeah, no, I definitely moved up to Northern California to CSA, a beautiful gym up there. And that's where Kevin was training at the time. And yeah, like I definitely wanted to give it a go. But then what happened is Deadpool came up. And I tried to turn Deadpool down at least 4 times because, you know, when the Colossus thing happens, you know, and like the hand covers the boob. Well, they said, we're not going to give it to you unless you show your boob. And I was like, well, that's okay. Then I'll walk away. And they're like, well, okay. But just like, consider it. And I'm like, there's no way. Like, I'm not a prude or anything. And I'm not opposed to sex. And I'm not opposed to like the sexual form and body and all of that. But I'm going to be damned if that's the time I'm going to like get that out. So I walked away from it 4 times and I was like, that's fine. In my heart, I was like, okay, I'm going to be over here training for a fight. And then they ended up coming back around and they're like, okay, we'll put Colossus's hand in the way. It's fine. And I'm glad I did that because I had the experience of like, and it's obviously what I want to do. I had a fight and I had a movie and I chose the movie. And that seems to be the way that things have gone.
And so you're done. You don't even think about fighting anymore. It's all about the movies.
I think about it every single time I hit that heavy bag down there. And I think about it. But if you were to ask me if I had the decision today, I mean, I would choose a movie because that's where my heart is and that's where I want to be. And that's, and I hope that maybe someday, I mean, if I really wanted to fight, I could just go and I could pick up a fight in the, you know, England or Thailand or, you know, somewhere, you know, and just do a Muay Thai fight and, you know, do that and just get it out of my system. But for right now, I'm working on a script. I'm working on this other giant that's become my fight now. And I train and I love fighters and I'm actually a bigger fan of the sport than I ever was. Because when I used to watch fights, when I was fighting, I would get anxiety just by like watching them. And now I watch them and I watch the personalities and I pick out the people that I adore. And I follow them to the core, by the way, which also you fans out there, your voices mean more than you know. And when you find someone that you love and when you find a fighter that you latch onto, like follow them through thick, follow them through thin, follow them, support them. Your words matter. We read our comments. Your comments. We read your tweets. I mean, it's easy to say that you don't care, but we do care and we are human. And there's a whole new atmosphere where, you know, people just want to drag people down for the mistakes that they're making. Well, we're all going to make mistakes and we're all flawed. So might as well just like start attracting and supporting the people, even if you never meet them, the people that, you know, because you never know, maybe just by doing that, you can make that person's world, like, you can make that person's world so much better.
One last thing, and that's very well said, and I appreciate you saying that, because I think sometimes the fans get a little too negative towards the fighters and they don't realize that that stuff really cuts deep. One last thing on the fighting. This past August was the 10-year anniversary of that fight against Cyborg. And I was wondering how you felt when, you know, when it's an anniversary, especially 10 years, things get brought up again and get featured again, and how you felt August 15th when that date came around, and even how you felt over time. You know, she tested positive a couple of years later, and if your feelings, like, do you have hard feelings towards her? Is it hard for you to watch that fight knowing how things panned out?
Cyborg is, well, personally, like, she's not actually a fighter I really like to, like, this is not in a hateful way. I don't like her style. I don't like the way she fights. She's not somebody that, like, I personally really like to watch fight. I like, but at the same time, she's one of the nicest human beings. And, I can see that, I've watched her struggle, you know, through everything that she's struggled through. And, I respect her struggle, and I respect, you know, like, she's not a perfect human being. Just like I'm not. I mean, like, nobody's perfect here. We're all flawed. We all have some sort of addiction or some sort of, like, fucked up thing that, like, we get stuck onto. So, like, her thing and her life, like, who am I to judge what, you know, she went through? And, you know, I don't know what it's like for her raising up. So, no, there's never, and there is not any hate. There's anything, if anything, there's love to continue watching Cyborg's journey, you know, and her story. And I'm fascinated how that's going to play out. And I'm fascinated on so many of these fighters out here. I mean, all of my fighters that I adore watching, the Diaz brothers, you know, Kevin Ross, and, you know, a lot of these people that, that I've trained with, you know, eventually they get to a point where they're not going to be able to do this anymore. And I think that's a really scary thing for someone who's put their entire life into the sport. And it makes me nervous, but at the same time, if there's any living testament to, you know, you get one door slammed on you, you go again, you try something else and you keep trying. And even if it takes you a decade, you know, if they do that to your voice, or some Brazilian beats the shit out of you on national television, you know, I mean, would you believe my dreams are so much higher than they are even right now? I'm so excited to keep on, like, seeing how high I can raise this life of mine and this bar. So I just, I don't know, support your fighters, support the people that you, you know, not all my favorite fighters win. In fact, they usually don't win. And I love that about them.
And so now you have this opportunity, Cara Dune, The Mandalorian, Disney Plus, which, by the way, I do believe you premiere in this coming up episode, right? Episode 4. Is that accurate? People keep asking me, are you not allowed to say?
I'm not officially allowed to say.
Okay. All right.
But this has absolutely been one of the best projects I could have been on. And I love my character. And the whole reason why I am coming on, of course, please watch The Mandalorian. I don't think it needs any of my help or needs you to tell you that. But, Ariel, I'm just really glad I had something proud to come on and tell you, because I am proud of this project, and I think that the sky's the limit from here.
Where were you at? I've heard you talk about Jon Favreau coming to you and saying that we created this character for you, and I know, I'll be honest, I'm not a big Star Wars person, but I know that when you are attached to one of these Star Wars films, there's the aforementioned Jon Favreau legend. You're tied for life, right? Like, I mean, that is something that sticks with you for life. Conventions, I mean, you are part of that family forever. And so I'm wondering, I've also heard you say how it's sort of like saved your career to get this opportunity, that maybe you were trying to find the thing and be accepted in Hollywood. Where were you at before he came to you with this?
I was in Vancouver hitting my head on, like, you know, ice blocks, you know, like I literally jumped into an ice pool and, like, came up, hit my head, and, like, I was doing my own stunts, which I do my own stunts, not to take away from the stunt community, but, like, I wasn't in the league of people that were passionately telling good stories. And I was drowning, like, I was just out there drowning, and really wondering, you know, kind of that moment with Cyborg, you know, when she beat me, like, what am I going to do with my life now? Because I have to be passionate. I have to, like, do something that I'm proud of. I have to create. I feel like an artist more than ever. So I just, when I got that phone call, it was actually 10 minutes before that. Like, I was just like, you know, you got to take yourself more serious and you just have to get in and you have to figure out, like, get into these acting classes and get into this world more. And the hard thing about going to acting classes is they're like, oh, Gina Carano. And then you're like, well, that's no fun. It's nice to be like, you know, where nobody knows you.
Right.
So, yeah. So he kind of like, he kind of picked me out of like the desert of filmmaking, and he put me right center in like one of the most beautiful plush educational. I mean, and in Star Wars is like, there was a reason why I was supposed to be a part of this. And I, every single day to me has been on that set. Like just, it's just been a dream. It just literally reinforces what I'm doing here. And all of these things and awful things and great things that I've been through, now more than ever, I feel like I belong somewhere. And that's been really difficult because I haven't really belonged anywhere for a long time. And the Star Wars fans have been, I mean, I always knew about Star Wars fans. I just didn't really know. And they have lifted my spirits. And like, I feel like I'm starting to become, hopefully, I'm like a baby fan because I have so much to learn, but I absolutely love. I mean, once you watch those stories and you read those stories, and it really is a special, you know, thing that has always been tied to what's going on in our world. And there's always been some strange correlation when people need hope. Star Wars kind of shows up. So it's just been really, I don't know, it's just been really kind of like miraculous.
Are you happy now?
I'm so happy.
When's the last time you were this happy?
I don't know. I like, life is going well. I want to continue to get healthier. I want to continue to, like, you know, get more comfortable, get better at my craft and keep developing everything. But no, I'm definitely pretty happy right now with, you know, reservations. I know people can love you one second and then they hate you another, but, I just really am. I'm a person that doesn't take anything, the love and where I'm at for granted. And, I'm very happy. Are you happy?
I'm pretty happy. Yeah. I can't complain. Yeah. Things are good. Yeah. You know, it's amazing. Sorry. Go ahead.
I hope this interview is,
Oh yeah. It is coming to an end in a matter of moments. So don't worry. I've taken up way too much of your time.
No, no, no. I mean, like, I hope it was worth waiting for. I didn't mean to make you wait. I really did just want to be proud of whatever, you know, I was going to come talk to you about.
It's a great reason, honestly. And in a weird way, I almost kind of love the fact that you were the only one to not appear on the show in a weird way, because that was like, it was almost like fitting in a weird way. And people would ask me why. And I'm like, I don't know why, but it almost, I don't know. It just kind of works. But I will just say this, like, I want people to know this, because I kind of played it up like, oh, you won't come on the show, won't come on the show. But like, you've been very kind to me. And even when I was going through tough times, you would always write to me personally. And that always meant a lot, that you always remembered me despite everything that you were going through. So I just wanted to thank you for that as well, because you would always just like pop up out of nowhere. And so I appreciated that very much.
Well, I am a fan, even though I don't watch your show. I'm a fan of you, which is, you know, I care about where your life goes, and I'm happy that you have three boys and a wife, and I'm happy. And it really pisses me off when they threw you out of the UFC thing at the conference, whatever. It really like enraged me. And I was like on the point of like, just like, what the hell's wrong with people? He's just doing his job and he's doing it well. And he's asking tough questions. And so, so I've always been a fan of yours and always have your back. So if you ever, you know, need it, but you know, maybe not another interview for like 10
years.
Yeah.
Geez. So what is it? Can we say it on the record? Is this like it for 10 years? Maybe, probably even more now. It took me 11 years to get you here. So this actually could be the last time we ever speak. So I hope you have a great life. I do think you broke some news though. Season 2, are you already doing that for Mandalorian?
Yeah. It was premiere. We did the premiere for it, and John Favreau came up behind me in an interview, and he's like, "Listen, she's been like doing a fight scene all day today, so we're having her back for season 2, obviously." And so that was the news there. So yeah, for all those people that are usually like, oh my God, did she get killed off? Or, you know, like, nope, I'm still here.
Wow. Okay. So I'm looking forward to it. I watched last night. I didn't see you. I think it was episode 3. So I will watch episode 4. I'm a proud subscriber. My daughter loves it. It's two boys and a girl, by the way, just for the record.
Amazing.
And maybe she will be a fighter like you one day. I wouldn't be opposed to that. But this has been wonderful. It really has. And now I don't know what to do in my life. Like, what are my goals now? I have nothing left to accomplish. You finally appeared on my show. This is it. I feel like it's over now.
Oh, stop.
There's nothing left. You know, this is the mountaintop. It's all downhill from here.
No, that's the thing, is now you develop a whole new goal, which is where I'm at. Like, you know, Star Wars, I couldn't even imagine this mountaintop. But now my brain just developed this whole new thing. And so you just never know where we're going to be from here, you know? You just never know what's going to happen.
Okay. Well, hopefully this isn't the last time ever, period. Hopefully we'll talk again. And
I wanted to do this in person, but
I know you did, and I wanted it as well. But it just was, you're very busy. You have a lot of things on your plate, your schedule. And
my sister had a baby.
Congratulations, Mazel Tov to your sister. Yes, and I believe your father was inducted into the Chicago Sports Hall of Fame. So you guys are very busy. And I just want to say to your agent Scott, thank you. And I won't bother him for at least another 6 to 8 months, because I have been bothering that man for at least the last 5 to 6 years, and he's probably really annoyed of me. So I want to thank him as well for being instrumental in making this happen. This has been so great. I really want to thank you so much for doing it. I want to congratulate you on all your success. You were a pioneer, a trailblazer in the world of MMA, women's MMA. You were the face of it. And now you're a pioneer. You're an inspiration for all those fighters who want to do something next, right? The next chapter. You're making it in Hollywood. And that's really hard to do, especially for MMA fighters. So it's so great that one of our own is involved in Star Wars. And, you know, from Elite XC on CBS to this, and from before that, it's really wonderful. So thank you for always being so great, for being an inspiration, a role model. And thank you for, you know, letting the world know that I was holding that microphone too long, because that changed everything. I really mean that. Thank you so much, Gina. I really appreciate this, and congratulations.
Thank you guys. Thank you guys for all your support, and those who stuck with me, and you, Ariel. Thank you guys, because it means the world.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Gina. There she is. Thanks. The great Gina Carano, in person, on the program, in the flesh. It actually happened. Wow. I am overcome with joy and emotion. That one meant a lot. I enjoyed that. And I just want to thank the Skype gods for making the connection as good as it was, because I will say the one thing that was really worrying me all day as I was driving here was, if this Skype connection is no good and I finally got Gina Carano on my show, I just might never do the show ever again. I just might end it right here and there. I cannot deal with that. And so it was great. So thank you so much. As you know, as I've said on the show many a times, Gina has meant a lot to not just me, but a lot of people covering the sport, fans of the sport. And she's an elusive one, and she doesn't do that often. And the fact that she just did this for an hour on the program is an incredible way to end the year for all of us. So thank you so much to her and her team for doing that. And if you have not seen The Mandalorian, if you are even not a fan of Star Wars, I highly recommend it. It's on Disney Plus right now. It comes out every week, and it's just great. A lot of you new fans may not be familiar with who she is and what she's accomplished, but there is no women's MMA without her. There is no, you know, UFC women's bantamweight title fight at UFC 245 without her. There is no Ronda Rousey without her. She opened all those doors, and yes, there were people that came before her, but if it was not for her, there is no such thing as women's MMA to where it is today, on the stage that it is today, accepted the way it is today. And she deserves all that credit, and that's why I've said, one of the first things I ever said on Ariel and the Bad Guy, she should be in the Hall of Fame, whether it's the UFC Hall of Fame, whether it's the MMA Hall of Fame. She should be in there because of what she has accomplished and the doors that she opened up for all those women. She is a pioneer and a trailblazer, and I will fight anyone who says otherwise. I will fight you, all right? So there you have it. Gina Carano on the program. Unbelievable. I don't even know what to do with myself. What do I do with my hands? I have no idea. I know what to do. I know to go to the next guest. We have one more guest to go, and I'm very thankful, as always, that he is on the program, because he has to wake up very early to do this show. I've been wanting to talk to him for quite some time. He is always very gracious and accommodating. He is the great Robert Whitaker. There he is, in his familiar spot, joining us via the magic of Skype. Robert, how are you?
Good, thanks, mate. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to have you on the show. And again, as always, thank you very much for waking up early to do the show. So it has been almost 2 months since your fight against Israel Adesanya in Melbourne. How do you feel about it? I know you've talked about it on your podcast, Grange TV, and I know you put out the stuff right after. But 2 months removed, how do you feel about what transpired that night?
Yeah, you know, I guess like in terms of being a mixed martial arts like athlete and as a person, like the worst possible scenario kind of went down that night. So losing in front of your hometown the way I did, you know, it sucked. And yeah, you know, it sucked for about a week and a half. And I knew it was a wave I was going to ride out. And on the back of it, I just jumped back into training. I jumped into a bunch of jiu-jitsu competitions, and I just started focusing, you know, on my next goals.
I know this might be a bit of a simple question, but like, how have you handled it so well? I remember the video that you put out literally in the locker room as you're going to the press conference, smiling, kind of, and I know that you were hurting inside. I know you didn't want to lose that fight, but you handled the loss in the moments right after so well. How?
Because I, like, and this is my opinion, obviously, so you have to be prepared to lose at this game. You know, you have to be prepared. Like, it's the other side of the coin, and it's always there. It's always looming, especially when you're at that upper echelon of fighters. You know, the top five. Anybody can beat anybody on a given night, and you know, that's what happened. But you know, another thing is, like, this isn't the first time I've lost, which I think is big. Also, I've lost before, and I've come back stronger.
And so, in that moment, you know, I was sort of reminded, I know you weren't the champion for, you know, 5-6 years like an Anderson Silva, but sometimes we've seen champions, especially as of late, given how big the sport is, the enormity of everything, sometimes we've seen champions relieved after losing their belt. And I don't know if I'll quite say that you were relieved, but it did remind me of some of those champions like Demetrius Johnson and Rose Namajunas, who didn't feel or look as devastated as we thought someone would be when they lose the belt. Was there any part of you that maybe didn't love being a champion and felt like, all right, maybe now I could just go back to being a regular fighter and not have everything scrutinized so much when you are the champion?
Yeah, I didn't really like it that much. It's one of those things that it comes with some pros, but I don't know, the cons really started distracting me. Like, there's a lot of media and a lot of expectations and a lot of self-imposed, like, pressure. And, yeah, it didn't agree with me super well. It's, I've always been the sort of guy that just likes the fight. I like the challenge. I like the next opponent. I like just trying to work out how am I going to beat you. And, you know, another thing is, like, I love being the underdog. I love people just writing me off and being like, yeah, he's going to lose. Yeah, I love the struggle.
So would it be fair to say then that you're not in a huge hurry to get back to that title, that you prefer being in this spot, almost like the hunter as opposed to the hunted?
Yeah, the biggest thing for me was, like, even my journey through the division, I never, that was never the objective. The title was never the objective. It was a result of, you know, I just focused on one fight after the next, and I just enjoyed it. I loved doing it. And, you know, I am hungrier than ever. Honestly, I can say that. I am excited for the next fight. I'm excited for what the future brings for next year. And, yeah, I just cannot wait to get back in there.
Israel posted a video after the fight where I think it was shot from one of the UFC cameras of both of you walking up into the cage on the fight night itself. And he was kind of dancing and doing his whole thing. And you seemed a little stiffer, a little more tense, a little more anxious. Is that common for you? I mean, to see it side by side isn't something we often see, but were you more tense, more anxious for that particular fight because of the stakes, because of the stage?
You know, if you there was a lot of pressure on that fight. the amount of pressure on that fight was like it was pretty ridiculous, you know. And I'm not trying to make excuses or anything. I'm looking at the father-in-law in the background.
Who is that?
Yeah, it's my father-in-law just lost. So the amount of pressure behind that fight was huge. You know, it's the fact that, like, the last couple of times I've tried fighting in Australia have fallen through the way they fell through. The last fight, the way it fell through, was huge. The fact that I hadn't fought in X amount of time was huge. the fact that I hadn't earned money in a great amount of time was huge. Just the amount of hype and presentation and media behind the actual event, it was just so much on at that night, you know. And it is what it is though. Like these are not excuses. I'm just answering your question.
Sure.
Like, I went in there and it just wasn't my night, and that's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes.
To lose to someone like Israel, who is so good but also brash, right? He dances, he does the stuff before the fight, after the fight. Does that make it worse in a way?
yeah, a little. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't salty because I lost to him. But you know, we're both close in age. You know, we're both like relatively young in the sport. So like I'm sure our paths will cross one day.
Okay, is that something you want?
Oh, of course. I'm very competitive. You know? Yeah, I'm the sort of dude that if I'm playing the Xbox and you beat me, I'm saying rematch straight away.
Have you allowed yourself to rewatch the fight start to finish?
I've seen clips. So I haven't watched the whole fight yet. It's the process,
right, to get through it.
Yeah.
You can still hear me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so when you look back at your time as champion, you know, there's so much happened, right? I mean, from winning the interim belt and the fights with Romero and he misses weight and, of course, the illness and all that stuff. Are you able to look back with fondness? I mean, that's a big deal for a fighter to finally get that UFC belt. But for you, it was anything but ordinary. It was tumultuous at times, to be frank. Yeah. How do you look back on your time as champion?
Yeah, you're certainly right. It was a strange time. Like, there are a lot of things in the air. But it's an achievement. You know, it's just a milestone that I hit in my career. It was, like I said before, it was never the objective. It was just a result of. And I take it with everything else I've achieved in my career. So I don't value holding the title any more than my win against Brunson, any more than my win against Uriah Hall, any more than my win against Jacare. Like, those fights and those wins are my career and my achievements. That's where I take the most pride.
I guess I was looking at the way you reacted to the fight a little closer than maybe usually, but I actually look at these things a lot. But I was, because, you know, you were one of the first fighters to talk about mental health and to talk about being down and trying to come back up. And I'm wondering if, you know, away from the cameras, at home, did this hit you harder than what we saw? Everything that you said at the press conference, on your podcast and things like that, was it tougher and you just didn't want to let us in on that?
Oh, it was super hard. You know, it sucked. It really did. It it's one of those things where, like, I don't know if anybody's like undergone something like this, like where you just didn't get the result you wanted. It feels like food loses its flavor for a week. But I guess with me exploring, you know, my mental health and making a real concentrated effort in identifying it and being aware of it, I could see it for what it was. And I can also tell myself that, hey, this is a wave. You just got to ride this out.
Do you feel like you are now kind of turning the corner, or do you still feel like you're in that moment where you're kind of grieving about the loss?
I was well and truly over it by about a week and a half.
Wow, that's it, huh? That seems pretty quick, all things considered.
Yeah, Bill, because I guess I hate losing, but it's not the first time I've lost. And for someone like me who didn't put a lot of value in the actual title itself, like there's no real big separation loss there. It's I just really hate losing. And the only thing I can do to make sure that doesn't happen again is just get back on that horse, get back in the gym, start working out again, start training, and just focus and put my sights on the next guy.
So you have begun training. You're back on the horse.
Very much so. Very much so. I am very, very excited for next year.
Okay. Do you have something you want to share with us? Do you have plans?
I wish. I've been trying to get to London.
Okay.
Who knows what the UFC want to do. I'm trying to find an excuse to go to Europe, take my family to Europe, and I would love to get out there, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
If only there was a proud British fighter who happens to compete in your weight class that has been calling you out repeatedly over the past couple of weeks, who's coming off a victory, a high-profile victory, who also wants to fight in London. If only that man existed, right? Wow. Oh.
Yeah, if only we could get two fighters that would sell out an entire arena in London in March. I don't know.
Darren Till, this man has been hitting you up a lot. He has been blowing up your phone. How do you feel about this?
I love it. I love it.
The messages are hilarious.
His sort of humor, I love that sort of humor, like the little real subtle, just commenting on everything I put up. I genuinely like it, and he's a good cat. I thought his last fight was amazing, and I guess that's the fight we're trying to edge out.
Okay, so that's the one you want. You want to fight Darren Till in London. You're down for this.
Yeah. I've spoken about this before. Like, that's exactly what I want. I want to go to Europe. I want to go to London. I want to fight that guy in London. I think it'd be a huge event, and I'd get to go to Europe.
And you mentioned that you thought his last fight, his win over Kelvin Gastelum, was an amazing performance. Why did you like that one? Because some people were critical that it wasn't all that exciting.
Yeah. Oh, but like in saying that, but Gastelum has, I think he's dropped everybody he's fought against, just about, you know. And he didn't do that to Till. Till didn't really take too much damage. Till negated a lot of Gastelum's strengths, and I thought it was just a textbook, like, really smart fight.
Before that fight, was he the guy that you were looking at, or was it after the fight and what he did to Gastelum in particular that you said, okay, this is the guy that I'd like to fight?
Before the fight, certainly I had my eyes on him. I always knew he'd probably move up to middleweight, and he's a gun fighter. He's a very good fighter, and I wasn't paying a ton of interest because I didn't want to jump on and become a fan of the guy I may have to fight. But I certainly could see that we may cross paths later down the track.
Gastelum was very critical of your performance against Israel after the fact. Did you hear those comments? And if so, what did you think of them?
Him and 4 billion other people. it's like, you know, it is. Of course, he's going to jump on me. Everybody loves jumping on someone when they're down.
Yeah, but with him in particular, it seemed like he was like really cutting deep there. At least I thought. Maybe you didn't.
Well, maybe he should have been focusing on his own things.
All right. Did you even hear them, or you totally ignore all that stuff?
I didn't hear him.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, because like I really do. I don't pay a lot of attention to this. I don't like the circus that this game has created. I don't like how everybody just has to keep trying to put shit on people. I don't like how everyone tries to get to the top by stepping on each other. Mm. And I think it's terrible. I think it's a terrible culture. I think it's a circus of itself. And I refuse to be a part of it.
Okay. Were you really pumping iron that day when you replied to Darren? You said I was pumping it. Were you really actually doing that?
100%. I was down with Justin Lang doing my strength and conditioning. I saw the tweet afterwards.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Now, I'm just curious because you know Yoel better than anyone. Yoel Romero went 10 rounds with the guy. If, in fact, that fight does happen, him versus Israel, who would you favor in it?
You know, I think Izzy's got the tool set to keep him away and to poke at him for 5 rounds, certainly. You know, that's not saying Romero can't just switch him off. Romero's a big, strong dude. But I just, over the course of like the last 3 years, like since the first time I fought him to today, he's not the same guy. And you can see that physically, you can see it in his face, you can see the way he fought Costa, he's not the same guy.
Okay, so you would favor Israel?
Yeah, I think so.
Is the plan to root for Israel to win, you know, for as long as possible so that you see him again someday?
No, I'm certainly not rooting for him.
So yeah. you wouldn't mind if he loses the belt next?
No, just so this doesn't get confused, I'm not hoping he loses.
Sure.
I don't care. Yeah. I don't care. Like, anybody in the division. I don't care what they do. I don't care if they win, lose, draw, step out. It doesn't bother me. I'm just going to focus on me and my next opponent, and that's it. And hopefully trying to get to Europe.
Are you done with fighting in Australia for the time being?
I'd like to fight elsewhere. You know, the last couple of times I've had fights set up here, and the pressures behind them, and then the way some have fallen through, I'm a little jinxed, it seems. Yeah. So I would like to. Plus, also, like I do believe that this game, and being an international fighter of this caliber, like I feel that it's part of the ride. It's part of the perks of the job is sure. being able to fight all over the world, and I'd like to experience that.
I thought maybe they would try to get you to fight in New Zealand, but it sounds like you want to fight on that March card in London.
Yeah, because like I want to travel the world. I want to enjoy this ride. Like New Zealand's as close as Melbourne.
Yeah, that's right. And you've never fought in Europe, period?
No, I've never been to Europe ever.
Right. Wow. And you want five rounds? You want main event?
Yeah, if that's what it is.
Okay.
Certainly.
Wow, okay. I like it. You versus Darren Till, main event. I think the English fans would like that very much as well. Robert, pleasure as always, my friend. Always great to talk to you. I really do appreciate it. And I really do have to credit you on how you handled that loss from the moment. I remember that clip that we just showed you in the locker room over there. And, I kind of joked on Twitter. It wasn't really a joke, but you said something at the very end. You said, if you're going to keep following along, thank you to those who are sticking around. And I think that you meant the live stream, but I also think you could have been talking to the fans, because sometimes the fans will just jump off the bandwagon, as you know, once you lose that belt. And so I found some symbolism in what you were saying there. And I just think that, when, for me at least, when a fighter goes through that on such a big stage in front of all those people and loses a belt and kind of, hits that rock bottom, if you will, and handles it the way you did. And I've mentioned other people along the years who have handled that way. My admiration and respect for you grows more so than it would in a victory. So I just want to tip my cap to you and say well done on handling it the way you did.
Thank you very much. It means a lot, honestly.
All the best to you, Robert. We'll talk to you soon, and hopefully you get that fight.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
There he is, the one and only Robert Whittaker. What a fight, and I know the English fans would love that. They announced that card late last week, and what a great time for UK MMA with – Darren Till doing his thing, and Molly McCann, and Nathaniel Wood, and Jack Shore, and I'm sure to be forgetting Arnold Allen is another one. I mean, that card in March would be phenomenal if all those people are a part of it. And the night before, you have Cage Warriors next door at the Indigo. So if you're coming to London, I'd love to go to that one, to be honest. I've always wanted to cover a Cage Warriors event, and I would love to cover that one, and then the next day in London as well. So that's a great time. Just a small, do I have 5 minutes here, Corporate Jake? I don't have 5 minutes. I have 2 minutes. All right. So just let me run down some news and notes. Corporate Jake cracking the whip here. He's very busy. Where do you have to go? Go home? Are the Jets playing tonight? Oh, that's right. They suck. What about those Bills? Oh yeah, 8-3. Anyway, how about the UFC and the United States Anti-Doping Agency? They've made significant revisions, according to our own Brett Okamoto, to the promotion's anti-doping policy in an effort to address concerns over an alarming rate of cases involving contaminated supplements. If you want to read more about this, go right now to ESPN.com/MMA. Congratulations. Oh, well, I didn't even know you had this. Here I am, sweating up a storm. This is the third revision, as you can see, to the UFC's anti-doping policy since 2015. And this is something that Jeff Nowitzki and company have been talking about, the cases of contaminated supplements. And we saw what happened with Nate Diaz and Yoel Romero. So this is a potentially good first step. I'm going to read more about this when the show is done. How about Dominic Reyes and John Jones getting officially announced for February 8th in Houston, Texas? Also, and Valentina Shevchenko against Caitlin Chookagian will be the co-main event for the women's flyweight title. So stay tuned for that. And also stay tuned, December 13th, Las Vegas, night before UFC 245. It's the return of the Helwani Knows Roadshow, the trivia challenge. Four new fighters answering UFC trivia, MMA trivia with me, open to all of you. I think we're going to a venue that's going to hold around 300 or so people. Tickets on sale very soon. So stay tuned for that. That is very exciting. In Las Vegas, the night before UFC 245. So if you're looking for a reason to attend, December 13th, night before, after the weigh-ins, after the ceremonial weigh-ins, it's going to be me and four of your favorite fighters doing a little trivia show. And if you didn't hear the one back in June in Chicago, go back and listen to it. If you're one of the very few that didn't hear it, trust me, it was a spectacular night. It was amazing. I loved it. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. So I'm excited about this. And thank you to everyone who's been working on this behind the scenes, Elizabeth and the whole crew back there. This is very exciting. So December 13th, I'll have more information on social media and throughout the coming weeks on the program. But I wanted to let you all know about that. December 13th, Las Vegas, night before UFC 245. All right. We're out of time. To everyone at home celebrating Thanksgiving, I am thankful for you. Thank you so much for watching our show, for tuning in each and every week, and what a Monday before Thanksgiving. Thank you very much to Chris Weidman. Thank you very much to Jarzinho Rosenstruck. Thank you very much to Luke Rockhold. Thank you very much to the great Randy Couture. Thank you very much, Edmund Tarverdian. Thank you very much, TJ Dillashaw. Thank you very much, Robert Whitaker. And again, thank you very much to the great Gina Carano for coming on the program. My heart is full. My heart is happy. We finally got this done. Where are you, New York Rick? We did it, my man. We actually did it. She came on for an hour. It was amazing. And I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did as well. That was really special stuff. Thanks to all of you for tuning in each and every week. I'm back Wednesday for the podcast, back Monday, the same old drill. If you missed anything today, check it out on our YouTube page, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all those places and more. You know the drill. You know where to find me. Back next week, same time and place. Until then, I say peace. Nice touch. I'm out of here.